making TV special.
Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
The DJ, A Panic on the Streets of London. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this special B-side episode from MediaMonarchy.com. That's live music from the Smiths going back to the mid-80s. But it is true today, my friends, as I come to you on this Saturday evening, August 13th, 2011. It's a full moon, and we are recording the show from the home studios of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. So very much to go over. We're going to try and let the clips do the talking, but this may be an epic one, so get set. Panic on the streets of London. Violent protest shakes troubled London district after police shooting, Tottenham cars and buildings ablaze. And this goes back to the original posting, and we'll kind of set the scene and then expand it further. This was posted to MediaMonarchy.com last Sunday, August 7th. And we take it from the intelligence agency connected Voice of America News. Several British police officers were injured and a number of people were arrested when rioting broke out late last Saturday in a depressed London district. A protest over the fatal shooting of a 29-year-old man by police on Thursday that started peacefully suddenly turned violent. Several buildings, cars, and a double-decker bus were set on fire before order was restored. The crowd, numbering in the hundreds, also broke shop windows and looted stores, pushing carts full of stolen goods down the streets of Tottenham District of North London. Police are now patrolling the district with concern of more trouble later on Sunday. The rioting was the worst London had seen in years. Tottenham, home to a large number of ethnic minorities, has a history of racial tensions. It was the scene in 1985 of one of the most violent riots in Britain's history, during which a police officer was hacked to death when Afro-Caribbean youths in a deprived housing estate of Tottenham went on a rampage. We do have several related updates and headlines on the UK riots and the wider geopolitical scene. But we'll begin with a compilation clip of the violent protests shaking the troubled London district after the police shooting.
This is not a third world country. This is London, UK. These scenes of riots, looting and arson have shocked the world. They followed an equally shocking killing of a 29-year-old man, Mark Dugan. When locals came to know about the details, they started protesting, which spontaneously broke into a riot. Unconfirmed reports suggest Mark Dugan shot an officer of the Scotland Yard from his handgun, but the shot hit the radio in his pocket and he was saved. But relatives are questioning this version. The eyewitness accounts of Mark subsequently being shot dead by the police are chilling. One of them says, "I heard the police shout something like, 'Don't move.' I saw them drag the driver out of the car. After that, they shot the passenger." Another account says, "About three or four police officers had two men pinned on the ground at gunpoint. They were really big guns, and then I heard four loud shots. The police shot him on the floor." Police are yet to make an official statement on why they killed Mark, but people close to him are standing firm for him. His girlfriend says, "I can't believe Mark was carrying a gun, as is being alleged." His neighbors say he was never a troublemaker and that he was low since his friend was killed earlier this year. As the news of Mark's killing spread, locals questioned if he was killed for being black. An unruly mob joined the melee and violence followed.
This is an attack on Tottenham, on people, ordinary people, shopkeepers, women, children, who are now standing on the streets homeless as a consequence.
Suffice to say, we did have officers at the scene, and we did have contingencies in place should things deteriorate. But it is important to stress we had no information that things would deteriorate, and of course there is no justification for things having deteriorated. So those who are engaged in the conduct that they are at present have simply no excuse.
A peaceful protest against the fatal death of 29-year-old Mark Dugan by police spiraled into a devastating night of violence, loot, arson and rioting. The worst scene in this black-dominated area of Tottenham Hale in North London in the last 25 years since the Broadwater Farm case. In London, Navanita Sarkar, Newsday.
Now let's get our related UK riot and geopolitical updates. Police stood back and let protesters take over streets. The original report from London Metro, but that's the cut-to-the-chase headline from InfoWars. UK police arrest over 200 as London riots continue. That is from Forbes. And the interesting piece that went quite viral, and you can I provide the links to YouTube and also to the Raw Story double version, where UK columnist says, "I don't call it rioting, I call it insurrection."
Well, violence has raised questions about how best to deal with rioting and disorder on our streets. I'm joined now from Lincoln. We've spoken to Patrick Mercer. I'm now joined by Darcus Howe, who is a writer and broadcaster. And you can speak to him now. And Marcus Dow is in Croydon. Marcus Dow, are you shocked by what you've seen there last night?
No, not at all. I have been living in London for 50 years. There are so many different moods and moments. But what I was certain about, listening to my grandson and my son, is that something very, very serious was going to take place in this country. Our political leaders had no idea. The police had no idea. But if you looked at young blacks and young whites with a discerning eye and a careful hearing, they have been telling us and we would not listen to what is happening in this country to them.
Mr. Howe, if I can just stop you, Mr. Howe, for a moment. You say you're not shocked. Does this mean that you condone what happened in your community last night?
I condone, of course not. What I'm going to condone it for? What I'm concerned about more than anything else, there is a young man called Mark Duggan. He has parents, he has brothers, he has sisters, and few yards away from where he lives, a police officer blew his head off.
Well, Mr. Howe, we have to...
Let me finish.
Mr. Howe, we have to wait for the official inquiry before we can say things like that. We don't know what happened to Mr. Duggan. We are going to wait for the police report on it. If I can take you on a little bit, you were talking about your grandson, you were talking about young people. You were talking about your grandson, you were talking about...
Now, it kind of goes on like that back and forth, and the delay is kind of bad, but that clip is being referred to, the one the BBC will never replay. That was Darkus Howell speaking live on the air on the BBC. But let's extrapolate on this further with a piece from theintelhub.com on The Guardian. The Guardian newspaper doing some of decent work on the UK riot situation, at least giving the alternative media pieces then that we're able to further spread and extrapolate on. Guardian on the ignored London riots context. That would be 333 deaths in police custody with zero convictions. So we now go to Tony Gosling on Russia Today.
Some 16,000 police officers will patrol the streets of London Wednesday night in a bid to prevent more violence. Well, for more on the situation, we're now joined live by investigative journalist Tony Gosling, who joins us from Bristol. Thanks for being with us. Many believe the riots are no longer about the killing of Mark Duggan. What are they about at this point?
Well, I think, isn't it after four nights of rioting? It's nice to see the Prime Minister finally back in the country. And I think actually what this is about is far deeper than just this one killing last Thursday. It's about a crisis of leadership in this country. We've got a Prime Minister that doesn't really connect with the people. A lot of the policies he's implementing are actually dictated to him by the banks, and he's lost touch with ordinary people. There's also a crisis at the Metropolitan Police. We had Sir Paul Stevenson, who was a very well-respected leader of the Metropolitan Police, had to resign recently, and there seems to be like a rudderless ship that the police are at. So we're also confronted with this whole generation of young people, many of whom voted for the first time in the general election last year, for Liberal Democrats, a lot of them, and they've all been betrayed. They all feel angry. So there's a simmering anger under the surface. But this killing of Mark Duggan last week clearly was the spark, and it's not the only death of an ethnic minority that the police have actually been responsible for. So, you know, we've had something like 340 deaths, mostly of ethnic minorities, in police custody over the last 12 years. Now, that's around about one a month, without a single conviction of a police officer. So this seems to me is a message that this particular killing last Thursday is not going to go unanswered. And it was also absolutely disgusting. The police, Metropolitan Police, and this is what I'm talking about, the crisis of leadership, their response to that killing. Basically, just ignoring the family's pleas to have some explanation. We've also heard now that there was lies told on the day to the press about who had fired the first shot, and it also seems that a dum-dum bullet was used to kill Mark Duggan. One shot to the chest, we're told. So the lies that were told on the day just make things worse. So this is very irresponsible behaviour by the police, and I think we need to see a wholesale re-examination of the way that we investigate these various kinds of death, either in custody or as people are being arrested, because it starts to look like there's some kind of shoot-to-kill policy out there.
Our last bit of updates on the UK riot situation. London riots investigation confirms police planted bullet and lied. Murdered man did not open fire. Again from theintelhub.com. Furthermore, on Mark Duggan's death, the IPCC may have misled journalists. Meanwhile, UK government prepares troops and possible martial law. AllGov.com has a great piece. Surprise, budget cuts lead to rioting. A 90-year history. And again, from allgov.com, London rioters destroyed 144-year-old family store. It survived the Great War, the Great Depression, and the Second World War, but the House of Reeves wasn't able to withstand the riots that swept across England. The family-owned furniture store had been in the business since opening its doors in 1867 when the suburb of Croydon was its own town 2 centuries ago. 5 generations of Reeves have worked the store, with a 6th on the way, but now any plans to pass on the business may have been reduced to smoldering ruins. Store operator Graham Reeves said nothing was stolen from the building. Rioters simply torched it while wreaking havoc in the area. On Monday night, a demolition crew began removing the ruins of the store, and on Wednesday, police announced the arrest of a 21-year-old man on suspicion of starting the fire. More on that from the Daily Mirror and the Associated Press. Our last bit on the UK riot situation before we get our few geopolitical headlines. Government mulls kill switch for Twitter and Facebook, and perhaps maybe some armies on the streets.
Mr. Speaker, everyone watching these horrific actions will be struck by how they were organised by social media. Free flow of information can be used for good, but it can also be used for ill. So we are working with the police, the intelligence services and industry to look at whether it would be right to stop people communicating via these websites and services when we know they are plotting violence, disorder and criminality. I've also asked the police if they need any other new powers. Specifically on face masks, currently they can only ask for these to be removed in a specific geographical location and for a limited time. So I can announce today that we're going to give the police the discretion to require the removal of face coverings under any circumstances where there is reasonable suspicion that they are related to criminal activity. And on dealing with crowds, we are looking also at the use of the existing dispersal powers and whether any wider power of curfew is necessary. Mr. Speaker, whenever the police face a new threat, they must have the freedom and the confidence to change tactics as necessary. This government will always make sure they have the backing and political support to do so. The fight back has well and truly begun, but there will be no complacency, and we will not stop until this mindless violence and thuggery is defeated and law and order is fully restored on all of our streets.
Furthermore, around the world on the geopolitical situation, possible presidential candidate in Ireland, Byrne, claims mad people in Brussels are running Ireland, and it is more than just a claim. More on that from IrishTimes.com. Former Ukraine leader Yulia Tymoshenko arrested on contempt charge. Tensions rise in Ukraine after Tymoshenko arrest. More on that from the French agency Press and the New York Times. Speaking of the New York Times, one that, again, as I keep mentioning, the paywall that keeps popping up or dropping down, as it were, had to chase this one and dig it back up. Russian president says U.S. had role in Georgian conflict. And our last bit of geopolitical history mystery, if you will, the 66th anniversary of Hiroshima. IBTimes.com has photos, as if you haven't seen them before. But that's just another horrific anniversary that goes by, and oh yeah, because we're running headlong into creating horrific new anniversaries to be remembered in years later, such as last weekend, as the U.S. Empire suffered its worst losses in Afghanistan over the last 10 years. Posted to MediaMonarchy.com, Tuesday, August 9th, weekend war losses in Afghanistan, worst ever for the U.S. Empire. We take just the immediate breakdown, as of course in all these situations it goes much deeper. From allgov.com, America's elite Navy SEALs have again borne the worst of the Afghanistan war for the U.S. military, losing 22 commandos last Saturday in the single deadliest day since the conflict began almost 10 years ago. Most of the SEALs were part of Team 6, the same unit that killed Osama bin Laden. However, according to the Pentagon, none of the men killed over the weekend took part in the bin Laden raid. There's no way to confirm this because the U.S. has kept secret the names of the men involved in the bin Laden killing in order to protect them from direct retaliation. Of course, there is no protection from the real paymasters of these operations. GlobalResearch.ca gets into SEAL Team 6 destroyed to cover up Osama execution hoax, and we have more from SpaceWar.com, Veterans Today, and just a breakdown of the past present, and possible future of this Osama SEAL 6 hoax.
Because something will always go wrong.
The SEALs then moving quickly and quietly toward the compound. They began a room-by-room search in a smaller building first, where they found the wives and children of two of bin Laden's trusted couriers. Next, the larger complex, where gunfire erupted. Two men, bin Laden's couriers, were shot dead. On the ground, now nearly 40 minutes, the SEALs climbed the stairs to the upper floors, and there he was, staring right at them. Those deadly brown eyes, the beard, a man well over 6 feet tall. This had to be bin Laden. The SEALs shouted for bin Laden to surrender. He resisted. They aimed straight for his head, giving the weapon a double tap of the trigger, as they are trained to do, to ensure they got him. At least one of the bullets entered just above his left eye. While a group of SEALs searched the house, grabbing computer hard drives and whatever else they could find, others grabbed bin Laden's body, carrying it through the compound and loading it onto the helicopter. Left behind bin Laden's wounded wife. The SEAL team had practiced this mission in the last month, even having a replica of the compound built in the U.S., where they trained for every possible contingency.
Some people even finding it amusing that America's most wanted fugitive, the man behind the September 11th attacks in the United States, was here in their town of Abbottabad. Now, I'm actually here with an eyewitness by the name of Jahangir Khan. Jahangir, if you could just stand right here for me. Jahangir, in the early hours of the morning, you heard some explosions. Tell me what you saw.
Actually, I was almost awake, actually, 1 o'clock. I was talking to my friend in UK online on Skype, and I hear the helicopter was moving. And I was talking to my wife, what's happening? And it was a little bit scary. We came out, and I have seen the helicopter. I went to top of my roof, and because it was totally dark, there was no lights, but I have seen them. It was, I think it was Apache helicopter. So they were moving around 12 o'clock. Then they start firing a few minutes. Then they came again, a few minutes firing. Then around 1 o'clock, we went inside. We thought, I don't know what's happening. Then by 1 o'clock, we went inside. And then 1:15, we hear the explosion, like big noise. Then we scared and we came out from, we jumped outside from the house and we saw all the people was going up to the, then we went up. Then I hear the people was crying there somewhere, like, then we run there because my cousin is living there, right? It's 5 minutes walk if I run from my house to there. Then we run there, me and my brother and a few other people. We run there, but when we went there, there was all fire going on. It was nothing. And then army came over, they took over. We were there until 4 o'clock.
Okay, so you woke up in the morning and then you heard the news. It was an assault carried out by the United States in which they captured and killed Osama bin Laden. What did you
when
think
when
you heard
back
the news?
At 4 o'clock from there to my house, I opened the news and this says about Osama bin Laden. I was shocked. And to be honest, I'm living here all my life. And you know that if somebody new comes in your street, in your area, you always know, like somebody is... You can feel them. You can see the movement. I ever seen anything like that. I can't believe that. I can't believe that.
You know, a lot of people in your neighborhood have said that they were suspicious about this house. Was there anything about this house that you found suspicious, that you found strange?
To be honest, I always go in the evening, walk from my house to the same house where they said the Osama bin Laden. The next house is my other house, which I rented to my cousin friend. And I every day in the evening, we went there. I walk with my wife for the just walk. I never seen anything like that, and that's why I can't believe that. And to be honest, it's not true. Osama, maybe some other people, but Osama is not a, you know, the bird who came flying, went to the inside, because this is a restricted area. When we came out from outside to come here to, always army will say, oh, where's your ID card? So it's not believed. Unbelievable.
Right. Thank you very much.
Sheikh, the man who murdered Osama bin Laden. Now I know that having dealings with people does not necessarily mean that.
Yes, we can now confirm that about an hour and a half ago, John, Osama bin Laden was buried at sea. We're told by a senior U.S. official that he was the only of the four bodies at the compound, the four people killed at the compound. He was the only person who was taken away, and that body has now been buried at sea. We can confirm that.
There was talk about possibly calling up Saudi Arabia and saying, "Do you want to bury him in his home country?"
possibly calling Afghanistan or Pakistan, but the fear was that if you put Osama bin Laden in the ground, he becomes his burial site becomes a shrine and an attraction and maybe a lightning rod for the people who believe the same way he does. So by burying him at sea, the Pentagon is hoping to forestall any kind of hero worship or at least worship of the burial site, because nobody's going to know where he is.
So that clip really just gets into the overall surrounding hoax of Osama bin Laden, and we even heard briefly there from the assassinated herself, Benazir Bhutto, discussing the death of Osama bin Laden years before. So let's get the related war horrors updates surrounding the last weekend war losses in Afghanistan, worst ever for U.S. Empire. DODBuzz.com reports that despite horrific loss, Spec Ops war goes on. That's special operations. Bodies of 30 helicopter crash troops back in U.S. That's from the Independent. Afghan Chinook helicopter crash, a one-off, the Pentagon says, BBC reporting. Danger Room asking the question, did a new Taliban weapon kill a chopper full of Navy SEALs? Press TV out of Iran reporting that a second crash killed 33 U.S.-Afghan force following the deadly SEAL crash in the Chinook helicopter. Crash kills members of SEAL Team 6. More from the Sacramento Bee, sacbee.com. My friend Clyde Lewis, I'm not sure if I've mentioned this before, he's made the comparison SEAL Team 6, and we hear that so many times that it is a possible reference to SEAL 6, as in the sixth seal being opened. For the breakdown, because I haven't even been able to wrap my head around it, the numbers changed so many times, how many died, were they there, no they weren't, back and forth, like so many other areas surrounding all of these black ops psychological operation hoaxes. A great way to break it down is from the one and only Alex Jones on SEAL Team 6.
I have two sources inside the Army, and I have another source inside the Marines, a colonel, who have confirmed and talked to members of the family of SEAL Team 6 that supposedly was shot down a few days ago over Kabul, Afghanistan, that they were killed to shut them up about what they know about the staged raid on Osama bin Laden's compound back on May 1st, 2011. Now, one of them called into the show. He's proven to be an incredible source of information. Everything he's told us has turned out to be true. The invasion of Libya before it happened, the step down of General McChrystal. He is a colonel in one of the branches of the armed services. I'll just say ground forces. I know his name, know his information. I'm not going to obviously reveal the full source here, but he'll be on tomorrow. And he confirmed what my other sources have told us, that they've talked to the family members. They've also given that information over to Cy Hirsch of The New Yorker magazine, the Pulitzer Prize winner, that this was a killing of the rest of SEAL Team 6 that was threatening to blow the whistle on the fact that members of SEAL Team 6 did die in that experimental stealth troop carrier helicopter that crashed in the OBL raid. And that the SEALs were talking about the fact that OBL was not there. They were there killing, quote, another terrorist leader. This is a total propaganda piece. And they have talked to widows and others, and the SEALs are hopping mad. No, this was a hit. Now, remember, this in a 9-plus-year war was the greatest one-day casualty ever. And it just so happens to be the rest of SEAL Team 6, the group that raided bin Laden's compound. And first you were told the SEALs weren't involved, then they were, then it was SEAL Team 6, then it was those that were involved, then it wasn't. But my intel is that basically this was the rest of SEAL Team 6 that was killed, and that this was not a cover story for the deaths back on May 1st to then add them on to another crash on the roster, a well-known trick used by our government and other governments. But indeed, this was the wiping out of the rest of SEAL Team 6 because they were speaking out and angry about what happened and tired of being used. Now remember, Pat Tillman wrote letters home, was going to come out against our government growing the opium in Afghanistan, which is now admitted years later. Pat Tillman was going to speak out against the war being a giant fraud and our government working with the Taliban. He was murdered, and that's now come out that he was murdered and they tried to cover it up. Private Jessica Lynch, a bunch of members of her team that spoke out and said that she cowered and feared, they were all murdered in the U.S., so she went public and said it's all fake, it's all a lie. In these PR events, they will kill people. These are major propaganda rollouts, and I've got incredible intel. So we speculated. We said, did they just claim that folks died in this crash that really died in May, or were they getting rid of the rest of SEAL Team 6? We don't know, but the official Bin Laden story is a lie. You know, the fake Situation Room photos, the fake video feeds they admit, you know, burial at sea, Bin Laden grabbing his wife, using her as a shield. They admit all that's a lie. Don't forget that. We don't know exactly what happened because they lied. We just know it's a lie. But now we have intel directly into Army and Marine sources. I know this is Navy, but they've all got the same scuttlebutt, that this whole thing's a fraud. And the fact that SEALs don't use National Guard Chinook helicopters on missions, this whole thing stinks to high heaven. The SEALs are very angry and believe that it was a hit. They're not stupid. They're very, very tight-knit. What was the word that was used? they're very in tune. They're very compact. We'll be covering it all tomorrow, but this is definitely a cover-up of what really happened with the OBL stage killing.
Now, you heard him refer a few times to dying in May in the May Day raid, and I forgot myself. Oh, that's right. There were all those photos and questions about what's this weird crash piece? Was this a plane or a helicopter or something? And that got just lost in the shuffle. SEAL Team 6, cleanup job. This will not be our last reference to this massive psychological operation that is ongoing. We will reference it when we get to all our 9/11 updates coming up later in this B-side episode 228. Let's get the rest of our related war horrors updates. Army accused of failing to properly test 5 million pieces of body armor. And as a way to illustrate that, toy truck saves lives of 6 U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan. I believe the story is a soldier had his little brother send him basically a remote control car that they're using to run reconnaissance and check for bombs and roadside bombs. And it worked. Judge gives go-ahead for another torture lawsuit against Rumsfeld and the U.S. military's plans for London-like riots. That's from theatlanticwire.com, and as we just said, with so many of these stories, we will reference them several times as we go through the different areas and the different kind of topics in the media monarchy kingdom. We'll find the through lines and the overarching themes of the memes. The last bit of War Horrors is a recently discovered TED Talk, I think, that goes back to 2004, on the weaponization of sound. And like so many situations, it's not the technology itself that is inherently bad. It's ultimately what they're going to do with it. One worthwhile comment to note at the bottom of this post on the weekend war losses. Interestingly, the government now claims that the RPG gunners who shot down the chopper got raided and railed shortly after. Link to the BBC. Yes, swift justice, or vengeance, rather. Funny, it's like a plot for a cheap Pentagon-sponsored movie about the awesome American war machine and the studly heroes out of the land of the brave, much like the crappy Pentagon-sponsored movie about the Bin Laden killing that's coming out 1 month before the 2012 election. Reality is being displayed like a freaking movie in front of our eyes. Wag the dog, anyone? Now, that Bin Laden movie is the furthermore references to this Bin Laden hoax that we're going to mention later on in our 9/11 updates. Now, let's take a moment. You may recall or may wonder why this is going to be such a massive B-side episode on a Saturday. This past week was my birthday, and I was taking some time off, taking it easy, saw a concert, and we're going to hear from some of those bands throughout this episode. Arctic Monkeys and the Vaccines. But yesterday we did go into the studio in our regular show slot, but we actually performed live Mixtape 11, Lawn Boy Walkman Volume 1, featuring some of the greatest hits of my lawn mowing youth, with whole chunks of music from School of Fish, Beastie Boys, Public Enemy, Sloan, Jellyfish, and The Charlatans, because it can't be news and politics all the time. So, my friends, that's volume one, and there will be more to come, because once I started to get into it, it was like, oh, yeah, there's a bunch of stuff I used to mow lawns to and listen to on my Walkman back in the early 90s, and we referenced there seems to be this kind of 90s nostalgia thing going on, and I guess I'm kind of falling victim to it myself. Another comment posted at the bottom of yesterday's mixtape, and again, if you subscribe, as you should, feeds.feedburner.com/mediamonarchy, you have already gotten the mixtape and hopefully have already checked it out before you're listening to this B-side episode 228. But posting also mentions a mix put together and posted up that was made right before the London riots, featuring a lot of London and UK hip-hop and underground music that now takes on a whole greater feel. So those links and everything are available as a comment right below the Mixtape 11 posting. And as long as we're talking about Media Monarchy-related alternative media, you know, the first Wednesday of every month, I'm a guest on the Bob Tuscan Show, connected with the Intel Hub and broadcast live on oraclebroadcasting.com. I sent out the audio, and you can also go to youtube.com/mediamonarchy and check out the videos. I record videos as we're doing the show in the air, and I upload them later and add extra multimedia parts and do some updates and add some annotations and correct some things that, of course, the kind, loving YouTube commenters point out. But that is there for you, youtube.com/mediamonarchy on the Bob Tuscan Show for August 3rd. That takes us to our good friend Clyde Lewis of groundzeromedia.org, our latest posting of his latest articles and episodes, AA Plus Armageddon, Evolution, D.B. Cooper, and more. And again, we provide the streaming and the podcast links for you, and also at Clyde Lewis and at KXL News, because Clyde is live here in Portland every weeknight, 9 to midnight, and you can listen live or subscribe to the podcast. But every day has an article and a show. So last Monday was Armageddon. Tuesday was the Evolution of War. Wednesday, Rollover, Play Dead. Thursday, My Life with D.B. Cooper. And we will have another D.B. Cooper update when we get to our Oregon Oddities later on. But I think I keep mentioning one on the show, maybe just to keep reminding myself that we're going to have Clyde on to discuss the D.B. Cooper situation and educate me on it. I'm only vaguely aware of it, again, not being from Oregon. And last night's episode, Unhinged. So again, all those articles, all those episodes linked up. The podcasts come out a few days later. They're not super real-time immediate. But again, if you subscribe, you will get them through your pod catcher of choice. One last related bit that's posted along on this latest Ground Zero posting, AA Plus Armageddon, Evolution, D.B. Cooper, and more, is a story in so many ways that the things discussed on Ground Zero then become the news. And I think if we're all doing well and firing on all cylinders, the alternative media in a lot of different ways and a lot of different avenues are the ones to discuss things that then become part of the larger social, broader media discussion in one way or another. So I believe a caller had been calling in to Clyde on Ground Zero discussing something going on in Ohio, and then their local news a few days later reported military surveillance blimp exposed. As usually, any kind of unidentified flying object is usually secret black op military.
And it was quite the hot topic today, as hundreds of people around the tri-state reported seeing a UFO in the skies earlier today, and it turns out there was an airship that landed in Greene County, Pennsylvania. 7 News reporter Dave Elias has more tonight from Harrison County.
Well, that's right. I've learned that it was an unmanned aircraft known as HALE D. It was an experimental aircraft that was being tested for the U.S. Army, and here's what it looked like. It was launched today from Akron by Lockheed Martin Communications. It's slightly bigger than a blimp, and it was loaded with communication and surveillance equipment designed to help troops. Now, according to the sheriff of Harrison County, it was supposed to land here near the Harrison County Airport.
They was going to bring it down on a slow descent into Harrison County out here on the military ground that the military owns out here beyond the airport. Apparently something went wrong this morning and caused that aircraft to veer off, for whatever reason they did terminate the flight of it.
So I asked company officials what caused the aircraft to come down sooner than expected.
We do not. It's still, we're calling it an anomaly because we don't know specifically what it is, and we won't know until we recover the airship and bring it back to our Akron, Ohio facility.
The aircraft was spotted over Wheeling, Warwood, and beyond before it finally landed in Greene County, Pennsylvania. The airship was supposed to hover at 60,000 feet. The sheriff says it posed no real danger.
You know, it's top secret through the military, but the batteries was a big thing. They didn't want anybody going around that aircraft once it was down, and they wanted us to provide security.
Now, I've learned that aircraft was supposed to hover here over the tri-state area for a period of 10 days before it was brought down here at the Harrison County Airport. In fact, Sheriff Joe Myers tells me that his department has been working with the Akron company for more than a month on this top-secret project. In Harrison County, Dave Elias, 7 News.
Wheeling, that's in the northern panhandle of West Virginia, and that is our first of seemingly numerous bizarre references to Ohio that we're going to hit on this episode 228B. But let's get now everything from cyberspacewar.com, one of the sister sites in the growing media monarchy kingdom, quickly, and it always seems to segue quite well whenever we come out of the latest from groundzeromedia.org. Forrestal and Bush paid price for keeping UFOs top secret. In one of the best articles on the post-World War II UFO cover-up, Australian writer Tony Brunt delivers the goods in Price of Deceit. And this gets into Secretary of Defense James Forrestal and Military Science and Technology Chief Vannevar Bush and the Roswell situation. We also have the Childs-Witted UFO encounter going back to June 24th, 1948. That sources back to an article from Cracked.com, and they do have some fascinating lists compiled. 5 UFO sightings that even non-crazy people find creepy. That's the Childs-Witted UFO encounter, June 24th, 1948. Spitzer Space Scope provides galactic traffic report. The Spitzer Space Telescope sees in the infrared spectrum and provides more info about galaxies otherwise obscured by dust and gases. More on that from deepastronomy.com. The 10 most sinister PSYOPs mission patches, such as Information Assurance, Defenders of the Domain. And this story, which gives links to VigilantCitizen.com, an always fantastic source, has been one of the more popular posts on CyberspaceWar.com. This was one I wasn't sure where to post. Like so many things, it could seem to fall into different areas. Electronic skin tattoo has medical, gaming, spy uses. The Epidermal Electronic System monitors heart and brain activity. From the French agency press, a hair-thin electronic patch that adheres to the skin like a temporary tattoo could transform medical sensing, computer gaming, and even spy operations, according to a U.S. study published Thursday. The microelectronics technology called an Epidermal Electronic System, EES, was developed by an international team of researchers from the United States, China, and Singapore, and is described in the journal Science. It's a technology that blurs the distinction between electronics and biology, said co-author John Rogers, a professor in material science and engineering at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Our goal was to develop an electronic technology that could integrate with the skin in a way that is mechanically and physiologically invisible to the user. And we have more on this story. We give links to sciencemag.org, but they're only giving you the abstract, not giving you the PDF actual report. And there is a YouTube video just giving you some visuals of how this works. But sciencemag.org, even though they're not giving up the PDF, they do have a podcast getting into what is pretty much right on its face, the singularity.
A new study published in Science this week demonstrates a technique for creating small, flexible electronics that attach to the skin without adhesives or wires, and that can stretch and flex over joints in much the same way that normal skin does. The devices, thinner than a human hair and analogous to common temporary tattoos, are far less invasive than the usual approaches to rigging electronic sensors to the skin, familiar to anyone who's had an EKG. The authors think the new devices may have applications ranging from physiological monitoring and treatment to human-machine interfaces and game controllers. The paper's senior author, John Rogers, spoke with Stewart about them from his office at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign.
What we're trying to do here is to really reshape and redefine electronics, which are conventionally built on the rigid surfaces of silicon wafers, to look a lot more like the human body, and in this case, the surface layers of the skin, the epidermis in particular. And the goal is really to blur the distinction between electronics and biological tissues in ways that can provide new functionality in both healthcare and non-healthcare related applications.
The goal is to blur the distinction. So let's go from under your skin to outer space and back again. From Reuters, I posted this past Monday, August 8th. Power companies prepare as solar storm set to hit Earth. Three large explosions from the sun over the past few days have prompted U.S. government scientists to caution users of satellite, telecommunications, and electronic equipment to prepare for possible disruptions over the next few days. The magnetic storm that is soon to develop probably will be in the moderate to strong level, said Joseph Kunches, a space weather scientist at the Space Weather Prediction Center, a division of the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA. Haha. He said solar storms this week could affect communications and global positioning system, GPS satellites, and might even produce an aurora visible as far south as Minnesota and Wisconsin. We have more on this from cyberspacewar.com, as well Forbes and Wall Street Journal and Reuters, and we have referenced it before, the auroras moving south. But my man, Alan, in Omaha, writing for cyberspacewar.com, asks, why have the northern lights moved south? The August 3rd M6 class solar flare resulted in auroras seen as far south in northern Europe as Germany and Denmark. A BBC Science article, Why Have the Northern Lights Moved South, explains northern lights phenomenon. The huge ejection of charged particles from the sun on the 3rd of August disconnected more of the Earth's magnetic field lines, and when these snapped back to Earth, the resulting auroras were visible much further south than usual. The picture, posted along with this story on cyberspacewar.com, that has a nice obelisk in it, taken on August 6th in Whitehaven, Cumbria, northern England. The Geophysical Institute at the University of Alaska provides amazing information on auroras with a FAQ. Links to aurora photography websites are provided. And you can see pretty lights without dropping acid. So, seemingly mere moments after we posted those stories on Sunday and Monday, then Tuesday, sun has largest eruption in 4 years from red orbit. NASA said on Tuesday, August 9th, that the sun unleashed the biggest solar flare in 4 years. The NOAA GOES satellite measured an X6.9 flare on August 9th. At 3:48 a.m., the bursts of radiation cannot pass through Earth's atmosphere to harm humans on the ground, but it can disrupt GPS and communication signals, according to NASA. It was a big flare, Joe Kunches, the aforementioned Kunches, space scientist at NOAA. We lucked out because the site of the eruption at the sun was not facing the Earth, so we will probably feel no ill effects. The space agency said it could produce enough increased solar energetic proton radiation to affect humans in space if they do not protect themselves. There was also a coronal mass ejection, CME, associated with the flare. CMEs, according to NASA, are another solar phenomenon that can send solar particles into space and affect electronic systems in satellites and on Earth. However, the space agency said the CME is not traveling, is not toward Earth, so no effects are expected from it. that stumbling in reading is due to the typos in that original report, as I seem to notice typos in so many places. I see them in tweets from, you know, major news outlets, the Los Angeles Times, and see them in the newspapers, and it's fascinating as everything is speeding up and the dinosaur media is trying to keep up. They're kind of screwing up and the cracks are showing. Our couple of related updates posted below: the sun has largest eruption in 4 years story on cyberspacewar.com. The second flop, DARPA loses contact with the HTV-2. More on that from dailytech.com, somewhere out there next to me in the Pacific. Good job, DARPA. And the darkest world known to man, the hot tress to be, and the darkness not understood. More on that story from KPRC in the darkest of space. Quickly, our last few things on cyberspacewar.com. NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory Guide to Solar Flares. You can check out a video from NASA on the SDO Guide to Solar Flares, as we seemingly might want to study up on that. But our last post on Cyberspace War is the 8/11 DEF CON, the list of headlines on Focused Chaos, Miracle Weapons, and the Facebook Op. And we begin with another reference to the London riot situation, panic on the streets of London. Twitter users face arrest for inciting London looters. More on that from The Telegraph. How the London riots showed us two sides of social networking. That is from Ars Technica. Meanwhile, Spacewar.com reports on hackers declare cyber war on U.S. police. Anti-sec campaign exposes data from 74 sheriff's offices. More on that from GCN.com. Researchers say Anonymous and LulzSec need to focus their chaos. And there is actually a conference called DEF CON. And recently, at that conference, they were training 8-year-olds in rudimentary hacking skills. Mossad's miracle weapon. That is the term. That is the phrase used by Der Spiegel in their new article, Stuxnet Virus Opens New Era of Cyber War. Furthermore, Google admits handing over European user data to U.S. intelligence agencies. More on that from Softpedia. Survey finds smartphone app store too much personal data. That is from Threat Level. And from Time Magazine, a new Missouri law says teachers and students can't be Facebook friends. And as long as we're talking about everyone's favorite CIA-funded social network, remember, the investment arm of the CIA called NQTEL gave Facebook startup capital. Anonymous vows to destroy Facebook on remember the 5th of November.
Attention citizens of the world, we are Anonymous. We wish to get your attention, hoping you heed the warnings as follows. Your medium of communication you all so dearly adore will be destroyed. If you are a willing activist or a guy who just wants to protect the freedom of information, then join the cause and kill Facebook for the sake of your own privacy. Facebook has been selling information to government agencies and giving clandestine access to information security firms so that they can spy on people from all around the world. Some of these so-called white-hot infosec firms are working for authoritarian governments, such as those of Egypt and Syria. Everything you do on Facebook stays on Facebook regardless of your privacy settings, and deleting your account is impossible. Even if you delete your account, all your personal info stays on Facebook and can be recovered at any time. Changing the privacy settings to make your Facebook account more private is also a delusion. Facebook knows more about you than your family. You cannot hide from the reality in which you, the people of the internet, live in. Facebook is the opposite of the anti-sec cause. You are not safe from them nor from any government. One day you will look back on this and realize what we have done here is right. Think for a while and prepare for a day that will go down in history. November 5th, 2011. We are Anonymous. We are Legion. We do not forgive. We do not forget. Expect us.
So I'm not sure exactly what the nuts and bolts of how this destruction of Facebook is set to go down, and that single video is on a YouTube channel, youtube.com/FacebookOp. But we've got a couple months to find out. As long as we're talking about the destruction of things, let's hop back to MediaMonarchy.com for the latest on EconoCrash or the coming greatest depression. United States loses AAA credit rating from S&P and the markets go wild. Like so many of our stories this week that kept growing and updating and expanding, we just have an original early report in a capsule form and then add in the contextual and subtextual information later. The United States lost its top-notch AAA credit rating from Standard & Poor's last Friday in an unprecedented reversal of fortune for the world's largest economy. S&P cut the long-term U.S. credit rating by one notch to AA+. On concerns about the government's budget deficits and rising debt burden. The move is likely to raise borrowing costs eventually for the American government, companies, and consumers. The downgrade reflects our opinion that the fiscal consolidation plan that Congress and the administration recently agreed to fall short of what, in our view, would be necessary to stabilize the government's medium-term debt dynamics, S&P said in a statement. The decision follows a fierce political battle in Congress over cutting spending and raising taxes to reduce the government's debt burden and allow its statutory borrowing limit to be raised. The S&P 500 stock index fell 10.8% in the past 10 trading days on concerns that the U.S. economy may head into another recession and because the European debt crisis has been growing worse as it spreads to Italy. Further on this original just AAA cut story that we posted last Saturday, August 6th, on MediaMonarchy.com. Furthermore, on ChristianPost.com, The Daily Mail, things from YouTube, things from TheHill.com, and even a handy-dandy debt crisis Q&A, what you need to know about the S&P cut from The Telegraph.
The United States' prize top AAA credit rating has been cut for the first time ever. Standard & Poor's has dropped America's ranking to a AA+. Now, the destructive force is the crippling debt, which Congress has struggled to agree on how to tackle, with only an 11th-hour deal to raise the amount allowed. Well, S&P says that's not enough and falls far short of what's needed to stabilize the government's runaway borrowing. The Obama administration says the analysis is way off and will damage any recovery.
We do have two comments below this first story about the AAA credit cut. One, a link to a video on MetaTube about the Black Swan Monday stock market crash, August 8th, 2011. And another saying, once again, how can a debt system ever get out of debt when it is designed to be in debt? Raising a debt ceiling does nothing but raise the debt. As it has been since the beginning of this very stupid financial system. Apparently, it's not the only thing that's stupid. Get a clue. But we give you the link to the update, which makes its own post on MediaMonarchy.com. Dow closes down 633 points after final plunge. This would be the Monday after the Friday AAA cut. Dow closes down 633 points after final plunge. And of course, the Obama-siah gave another Obama-pocalypse AA+ speech on this manic Monday. But the Dow Jones Industrial Average finished the day Monday down 633 points after a full day sell-off accelerated in the final hour of trading as investors struggled to absorb S&P's decision to downgrade the U.S.'s credit rating. Investors piled out of stocks and into a few safe havens, such as gold and treasury bonds. The appetite for treasury bonds suggests that the S&P downgrade has not shaken investors' faith in U.S. bonds. Market experts said the Monday sell-off was sparked by the S&P announcement, but was motivated more by growing concerns about the weakness of the global economy. More on this story from Money, from Fox Business, from MarketWatch.com, from YouTube and YouTube and YouTube. But our other related EconoCrash updates help to tell this story. George Washington's blog, WashingtonsBlog.com, Dow falls 633, the sixth biggest stock market crash in history. And the economiccollapseblog.com gets into this stock market crash of 2011. Ron Paul notes that the S&P downgrade is, quote, theater to build up the fear, And you can watch that video on Raw Replay. Bloomberg reporting U.S. will roll out QE3 after the S&P rating cut. But again, from Raw Story and Raw Replay, the sometimes great on things, Barney Frank, notes quite correctly that the military spending is to take much of the blame for the S&P downgrade.
Joining us now is Democratic Congressman Barney Frank of Massachusetts. He's the ranking member of the House Financial Services Committee. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning.
So S&P said it downgraded the U.S. not just because of its debt problems, but because of, quote, the lack of apparent willingness of elected officials as a group to deal with the U.S. medium-term fiscal outlook. Do you see any sign that this is going to drive the two parties to play nicely together now?
Well, I don't think we should denigrate the role in a democracy of honest disagreement, but I would hope there would be one bipartisan agreement we could reach that I've been working for. There is one area in American policy where we are doing things disproportionate to the rest of the world. I'm sorry. You know, we don't give our older people more medical care. We don't have a better retirement. We don't spend more on the environment. Where America is disproportionate is in our extraordinary willingness to be the military policeman for the whole world. We spend far more of our national economy as a percentage on the military than just about any nation except a beleaguered nation like Israel, which has to do it in self-defense. We are spending well over $120 billion a year in Iraq and Afghanistan. The time has come to find a place where we could, I think, together make some savings. So I am. That's going to be my mantra for the next few months. I've been working on it. I have some Republican support. Ron Paul, a leading conservative Republican.
So obviously, Congressman, the military spending is going to be one of the many things on the table with this bipartisan commission, very powerful new commission.
Yes.
And I would assume that there's going to be just incredible pressure on this commission now to come up with $1.5 trillion worth of deficit cuts.
Now, as we'll reference in a little bit, it sure was interesting to see how something that was always referred to as Super Congress, suddenly its nomenclature changed and no one called it that anymore, and it was like a uniform decision had been made across the media to refer to it as the Super Committee, or then even the Debt Committee. So before I freak out, let's go to CNN on why not to panic.
We don't know exactly what's going to happen because in the history of this country, our AAA credit rating has never been downgraded. It's an unprecedented move. And I spoke to a New York Stock Exchange trader who told me this is unprecedented. And we don't know what it's going to mean going into Monday session. But for everyone watching right now that wonders, how does this affect me at home? What we could see is interest rates going up sort of across the board, right? So if you have an adjustable rate mortgage at home, your interest rate could and might likely go up. If you have a car loan, your interest rate could go up. If you have a privately funded student loan, that interest rate could go up. The availability of credit could get tighter. But again, Joe, we don't know. That's what's expected will happen. We don't know because it hasn't happened before. But I do want to point something out again to put this in perspective so that people don't panic. Interest rates right now in this country are the lowest they've been since the 1950s under Eisenhower. So even if we do see an increase, I was reading this morning in the Wall Street Journal, let's say 0.5% increase, 500 basis points, you're still talking about coming from a very, very low level. But yes, it's going to have an impact. And I think above all, more importantly than interest rates, this has a big impact psychologically on the American public that already feels beat down, that is dealing with unemployment at a significantly high level, that is not really getting substantially better. So this is a psychological blow to an already very weak economy.
Well, you heard it right from CNN. This is a psychological blow, or operation, if you like. And there's panic again. Panic on the streets of London. Panic on Wall Street. Panic coming to Main Street? With a little tiny question mark. Furthermore, on our related EconoCrash updates, police raid Milan offices of Moody's and Standard & Poor's. That is from The Guardian. And there we reference Italy yet again. And then we started to learn Washington State's Murray will co-chair the deficit super panel. And the AFP reporting debt super committee ready for action. Top U.S. House of Representatives Democrat Nancy Pelosi on Thursday appointed three close allies to a super committee tasked with finding at least $1.2 trillion in deficit cuts over 10 years. And I believe the joke has already been made. Hey, why don't you find the $2.3 trillion missing from the Pentagon that Donald Rumsfeld talked about on September 10th, 2001? Pelosi's naming of Democratic Representatives James Clyburn, Xavier Becerra, and Chris Van Hollen brought to full strength the 12-member panel that will be ground zero for the next wave of angry battles over the swollen U.S. debt. The thrust of the committee must be to grow in American prosperity enjoyed by all Americans, Pelosi said in a statement that urged a focus on economic growth and job creation that reduces the deficit. Clyburn, who is black, and Becerra, who is Hispanic, are the only minorities on the panel, while Democratic Senator Patty Murray, its co-chair, is the only woman. Dollar falls most in 40 years against the Swiss franc after the Fed's pledge to maintain key interest rate at a record low. More on that from Bloomberg, and that happened on this manic Monday. Meanwhile, Tiny Tim Geithner tells Obama he will remain as Treasury Secretary. More on that from the Washington Post. Postal Service proposes cutting 120,000 jobs, pulling out of health care plan. More on this story from the Washington Post. And I don't think that I've referenced it here, but I've mentioned the post office a few times in the recent months, and it seemed like I was just hating on him. And I got an amazing email from someone who works as a letter carrier and said, you know, is there a particular hate? And I honestly was just like, you know, I don't think actually that I thought too much about it, especially, you know, when they kind of busted me down. Rightfully so. It just struck me as another government-run thing that seems designed to kind of fail, as it seems to kind of be grinding to some kind of halt. And then when the Netflix thing happened, it seems as though the closing of post offices is going to relate to the rising prices and Netflix ultimately cutting the DVDs, which ties in with this price hike. And that is a discussion we're going to have to get more into. And again, on so many things, I'm not the god of all this. I don't have it all figured out. I just pay attention to a bunch of news, and do I get things wrong? Do I get things misconstrued? Yes, I do. Unfortunately, I do my best not to. So your news tips and comments and criticisms are welcome and encouraged. MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. AIG sues B of A over mortgage bonds. J.P. Morgan takes over finances for Kentucky state government. Debt hit students urged to sell their kidneys, and 10 of today's hottest jobs, or as Cryptogon.com notes, proof that America is doomed. Our last note of related econo crash updates again from Bloomberg. U.S. consumer confidence drops to 3-decade low amid economic headwinds. Is that what you call them? You're listening to the B-Side, episode 228 from Media Monarchy. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. I referenced seeing a show the other night on my birthday. It was here in Portland, Oregon at the Crystal Ballroom. The headliners were Arctic Monkeys, but the openers were the Vaccines. So let's check out Post-Breakup Sex.
Yeah.
hailing from the protesting London, England. That is The Vaccines with Post-Breakup Sex from their debut full-length album released on Columbia Records, and it's called What Did You Expect from The Vaccines? The band have drawn comparisons to the Jesus and Mary Chain and the Ramones. They describe their influences as 50s rock and roll, 60s garage and girl groups, 70s punk, 80s American hardcore, C86, and good pop music. And I concur, as I love many, if not all, of those things. And I saw those guys the other night open up for the Arctic Monkeys at the Crystal Ballroom here in Portland, Oregon. And you can find a bunch of those clips that people have recorded and posted up on YouTube. So, I'll remind you again, this is the B-Side episode 228 from MediaMonarchy.com, being recorded in the home studios on Saturday evening, August 13th, 2011. It's a full moon and the freaks come out at night. I want to thank all the recent donors to Media Monarchy, and I realize a lot of it may just kind of come in the form of birthday presents, but a huge, huge thanks, and your support helps keep Media Monarchy growing and going and paying our DJ dues and Skype credit and domain names and fix-its and cables and upkeep and all of that stuff that hopefully we don't have to spend any money and we will not go broke running this operation at all. Steve in Oklahoma, Jeff in California, John in Maryland, Morgan in California, Gene in Virginia, Glenn in Pennsylvania, Remy in Quebec, Keith in Florida, Sam in Belgium, Robert in Hong Kong, and James in Alberta. Huge thanks to all those folks and my friends. The donate button is on the top right of MediaMonarchy.com, and we appreciate your support. And you can also mail us a check if you're not into the PayPal, as again, we've been discussing finding an alternative around PayPal. But we have a P.O. Box, and it's written on the top right of the page, P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon, 97212. And I think that kind of dirty song from The Vaccines sets the stage for where we're going next, as so many things seem to be reverting back to the era of the earlier 20th century in the States, as now it's just Bonnie and Clyde, Mickey and Mallory, Badlands, California, and all of those things. Doherty Gang, Fugitive Siblings, Captured in Colorado. From ABC News, the three bystanders who chased and helped capture a member of the Fugitive Doherty Gang after Wednesday's high-speed police chase ended in a crash had no idea who they were helping to apprehend.
We continue to follow a developing story out of Colorado. Three Pasco County siblings on the run for just over a week have been captured. The Doherty Gang, Ryan, Lee Grace, and Dylan, were caught this morning near Pueblo, Colorado, after a high-speed chase. The three were spotted at a shopping center in Colorado City this morning. Authorities say that led to a 20-mile-long chase at speeds of over 100 miles an hour. They finally crashed into a guardrail just south of the town of Walsenburg. The FBI says today's capture could not have been done without tips from the public.
The key factors here was national media coverage, local media coverage, digital billboards, but none of that stuff really makes any difference unless there are citizens willing to pick up the phone and make calls to law enforcement. The only way we knew these people were possibly in Colorado still was because somebody saw the media coverage, made a phone call to law enforcement.
And no troopers were hurt during the high-speed chase. Lee Grace was shot in the arm by authorities during the pursuit, though. We now have the opportunity to take you live to the scene of where the Doherty Gang was caught. Reporter Tyler Lopez is live for us in Walsenburg. Good evening, Tyler.
Good evening. Yeah, we have citizens willing to do a lot more than just pick up a telephone call. We have some citizens that were willing to chase these suspects after it ended. Like it looks behind me, you can still see that Subaru Impreza hanging from the guardrail. I-25, our major north-south thoroughfare in Colorado, was still closed in the Walsenburg area, leading to massive traffic jams. But after that Impreza ended up on that guardrail, two construction workers took on new roles and helped bring one of the suspects in. The white Subaru Impreza ended up hanging from its rear wheels on the guardrail along the on-ramp at exit 52 onto southbound I-25. But after this spectacular crash, the result of police stop sticks, two construction workers took on new roles.
All the police officers are coming down the ramp with their guns drawn and kind of surrounding it.
They noticed someone hiding in the bushes nearby.
You talked to him?
Yeah, we're trying. He's in on his own. He's like just walking. He's bleeding from the accident.
For the next quarter of a mile, through barbed wire, brush, and a gully, The secondary but still dramatic chase was on.
And he turned around and pointed like he had a gun at us and said, you know, get back. So that's when kind of, you know, two of us kind of got down. We didn't know what was going. Then we actually noticed that it was just his hands.
At that point, Shane says he watched another man named Dave actually grab the suspect and finally end the Doherty gang's cross-country run.
He just gave up right there and just said, you know, enough, I surrender. Well, when you see that, you know, officers are after somebody and you think that you can maybe help out,
you gotta do what you gotta
yeah,
do.
You try to help out the best you can.
Here's a live look now at I-25. This is traffic getting off of the freeway onto a surface road in Walsenburg. This traffic jam is horrible. At least an hour, according to many of the witnesses we've talked with who've been stuck in it. So if anybody you know is heading south on I-25 right now, that's the kind of traffic jam they're going to be dealing with. I also talked with federal and state authorities. They confirmed for me that Dave and Shane, you just met right there, did play a role in catching the third Doherty suspect, making sure that run did not continue past this section of Walsenburg. Reporting live in Colorado, Tyler Lopez. Now back to you.
All right, thank you, Tyler. This dramatic story of a band of siblings robbing banks and shooting at police was getting international attention. Don't be surprised if a book or movie comes out soon, but here's the short version of what unfolded over the last 8 days. It started in Pasco County August 2nd when Zephyr Hills police tried to pull over Ryan Doherty, brother Dylan, and the eldest sibling Lee Grace for speeding. It didn't go well.
He's now headed southbound on Morse Bridge, fired several more shots at me.
They not only didn't stop, the occupants opened fire, nearly hitting the officers and shocking the quiet neighborhood.
It's so loud, I didn't know what it was. It kind of sounded like someone was angrily pounding on my door.
Pasco Sheriff Chris Nocco was angry.
We're not going to tolerate this in Pasco County. We're going to use every resource to hunt these people down.
Detectives now knew who they were chasing and possibly why. Before the traffic stop, Ryan Doherty, with multiple felonies on his record, had cut off a monitoring bracelet he was wearing after being convicted as a sex offender. During the chase, Ryan also sent his mother an ominous text, saying at one point, "We all have to die."
It is very clear that these three are on some type of mission.
The Doherty gang, as they came to be known, moved toward the top of the most wanted list and were tentatively linked to gun parts found discarded in a restroom waste can at Tampa International Airport.
Not operable, just pieces of a gun.
The search then turned to Valdosta, Georgia. The three are spotted in surveillance pictures robbing a bank. They shoot holes in the ceiling with a high-powered weapon before taking a bag of cash. The stakes keep getting higher, which is one reason the Doherty's mother agreed to an exclusive interview with ABC Action News to make her plea.
Only Mom knows what good people you are inside. Please prove me right and everybody wrong by doing the right thing now and turning yourselves in.
After a few false sightings, a promising call comes in Saturday from a campground in Colorado Springs. By the time police arrive, they're gone. But then this morning, their white Subaru with stolen Texas plates was spotted south of Pueblo, Colorado by local police.
So we enlisted the help of the State Patrol, being so close in proximity to the highway, in case they took off, and they did.
So the drama ends much as it began, with the suspects reportedly shooting at law enforcement in a high-speed chase. But this time, spike strips are put down, there's a crash, and the three are pulled from the wreckage. Sheriff Nocco of Pasco County gets the last word.
If these three fugitives wanted a battle with law enforcement, we would win that battle, and that's what happened today.
Well, 29-year-old Lee Grace Doherty was reportedly shot in the arm in the course of the capture. She reportedly tried to fire back at the apprehending officers. Now, amazingly, in this 8-day run of lawlessness, hers was the only physical injury anyone suffered.
Lee Doherty, 29-year-old stripper, heavily armed brother Ryan, 21, and half-brother Dylan, 26, had become the focus of a manhunt that stretched from Florida to Colorado in the past week. Now, the comment posted below this before we get all our other unbelievable related murder and mayhem updates puts this into perspective correctly. Where they note, one, their most recent mugshots look quite a bit different than these that we've been seeing for the last few days, except for the one guy. So you ask the question, why do they stick together when everybody knew exactly what they were looking for then? Are these the dumbest three desperados on the face of the earth? Oh, well, just another one of those distraction, quote-unquote, news stories that have absolutely no bearing on my life. And they do have it correct in that way. And we've said it before, if we haven't said it in a long time, that's always a way to kind of gauge news stories, is to ask the question of how many people does this affect. So when you're paying attention to whatever salacious tabloid, maybe even a murder story, or even if some affair story, sex scandal, ask how many people does that actually involve, and it's usually three, it's usually the two cheaters and the one getting screwed over, basically. However, I posted this story because I think it is an unfortunate harbinger of things to come, as we, again, are going to return to some kind of Bonnie and Clyde Wild Wild Depression West here in the North American Union. So, having said that, let's get our other related murder and mayhem updates. Anders Breivik, remember him? That's right, the Norway nightmare, that black op situation. The latest update we have concerning this is that Breivik called the police at least 10 times to surrender from the island where he was supposedly shooting these dozens and dozens and dozens of people. And of course, we've covered the reports of second and third gunmen from witnesses on the island. Jury convicts five officers in post-Katrina shootings. We reported that for you last week, but here it is posted to the site from the Associated Press. And we return again to Ohio. Ohio serial killer Anthony Sowell, S-O-W-E-L-L, given a death sentence. Meanwhile, Ohio man kills seven and is then killed by the police. Both those stories from the Deutsche Press Agency. But then from CopycatEffect.com, professor's suicide at Chestnut Hill, Pennsylvania, near Lover's Leap. And as long as we're at school, a mail bomb on a Mexico campus injures two professors. That's from NationalTerrorAlert.com. And one student is held in the death of his principal at his school in Tennessee.
Crime tape surrounds Memphis Junior Academy as police investigate the killing of the school's principal. She's been identified as 48-year-old Suzette York, and police have taken a 17-year-old male student into custody, although they haven't disclosed a motive. The school is affiliated with the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and classes began Monday. About 100 students from pre-kindergarten through high school are enrolled there. On the lawn outside, a sign reads, "Welcome back." Wednesday, a parent with a child at the school described the principal as personable and spiritual, with a natural concern for the children. Another person who studied there said York was a science and math teacher at the school. He said she left for a time and then came back to become an administrator. Ross Simpson, The Associated Press.
Furthermore, from The Associated Press, four flash mobsters crowd size attempting cover. Now, we've covered this as far as the UK riot situation, and also as far as the curfew going on in Pennsylvania. I believe for more on that, we have to go to twitter.com/MediaMonarchy, which we'll go there at the end of this episode. For some of the things that don't make it to the sites, twitter.com/MediaMonarchy is a great source for constant news updates, and it's really, it's on the pulse kind of momentary, quick action at Media Monarchy. For flash mobsters, crowd size attempting cover. The July 4th fireworks display in the Cleveland, Ohio suburb of Shaker Heights was anything but a family affair. As many as 1,000 teenagers mobilized through social networking sites turned out and soon started fighting and disrupting the event. Woman tries to bring fake bomb on a plane. Three arrested at Phoenix Airport. Man arrested at Omaha Airport over suspicious item. And both of those are from NationalTerrorAlert.com. A fascinating story from the New York Times. By helping a girl testify at a rape trial, a dog ignites a legal debate. Out of Poughkeepsie, New York, Rosie, the first judicially approved courtroom dog in New York, was in the witness box nuzzling a 15-year-old girl who was testifying that her father had raped and impregnated her. Rosie sat by the teenager's feet. At particularly bad moments, she leaned in. When the trial ended in June with the father's conviction, the teenager was most grateful to Rosie above all, said David A. Crenshaw, a psychologist who works with the teenager. She just kept hugging Rosie. Now, an appeal planned by the defense lawyers is placing Rosie at the heart of a legal debate that will test whether there will be more Rosies in courtrooms in New York and possibly other states. Rosie is a golden retriever therapy dog who specializes in comforting people when they're under stress. Both prosecutors and defense lawyers have described her as adorable, though she has been known to slobber. Yes, that is from the New York Times, and we are not describing the plot of some Disney movie. And it gets stranger and stranger and stranger. Video intensifies the interest in a Mississippi killing. Apparently, white teens ran down an African-American man and killed him in Jackson, Mississippi, as again we see people going nuts. Identical twins, one charged in fatal shooting, create confusion for the police. And just to wrap up all this insanity, bull escapes slaughterhouse, runs through New York streets, and of course, yes, the jokes about, haha, the bulls are running in New York, but they're not on Wall Street, they're escaping from the slaughterhouse. Let's run now over to all the latest from the newest site in the Media Monarchy Kingdom, and that is holyhexes.com, getting into the occult, getting into religion in society, getting into sinister forces. From the Salt Lake Tribune, Warren Jeffs gets life in prison for sex with underage girls. During his bizarre self-representation on trial for sexual assault, Warren Jeffs protested over and over again the charges were an attack on his people and religion. Before a jury sent the 55-year-old Jeffs to prison for life Tuesday, prosecutor Eric Nichols gave a forceful answer. The evidence in this case has shown that this is not the prosecution of a people. This is a prosecution to protect a people. More on this story from Christian Science Monitor and flashbacks to holyhexes.com. The update is that Jeff's brother will take over the operation, so claims an ex-FLDS member. Furthermore, on holyhexes.com, satanic ritual abuse, child trafficking, and murder in Omaha, Nebraska. Video surfaced on the internet in 2008 from a survivor whose father was a performing high priest in a cult that was practicing in Omaha, Nebraska during the 60s and 70s, according to the victim's website, davidschurter.com. Schurter, S-H-U-R-T-E-R. David Schurter, a satanic ritual abuse victim, relates his involvement in an organized cult in several self-produced videos. Schurter believes many people he encountered in the 80s as a young gay in downtown Omaha and in his father's cult were involved in the Franklin Credit Union scandal. You can download the book, The Franklin Cover-Up, by John DeCamp, if you're unfamiliar with one of the most corrupt and unbelievable scandals in U.S. history. John DeCamp wrote the book as an insurance policy on his own life on the advice of a former CIA chief. This story we've discussed and referenced and gone into many times, the Franklin scandal, the Franklin cover-up, conspiracy of silence, call it what you want. It is about child kidnapping, ritual abuse, pedophilia within the highest levels of this government. And my man Alan in Omaha is now writing on holyhexes.com, so this is something that, again, hits right in his backyard. And this story, as we've said, goes back into the decades but still reverberates through the present day when we see things bubble to the surface and when we see references made. And one of the most amazing is coming up in just a little bit on the show once we get into the news purge. But furthermore, on holyhexes.com, Geraldo Rivera's 80s classic Exposing Satan's Underground. The Geraldo Rivera special expose from the 80s is still worth watching today, with YouTube links provided for you. Some critics dismiss it as CIA disinfo. It recaps, though, many of the bizarre murders of that decade, which in retrospect seems a high watermark of cult interest. And I believe that time was referred to as the Satanic Panic. The McMartin Preschool and Bizarre Bob Berdella cases are heavily laced with satanic ritualism. It's certain a cartoon-like villain like Army Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino, who defends his religion to the nation, makes it more difficult to take the presentation seriously. The real question, should it be taken more seriously? Is it just a meddlesome CIA disinfo campaign? What's the purpose? Maybe it's both. A campaign to distort and render unbelievable the behavior of a cult that masquerades as a government agency. Another fascinating story from Alan in Omaha, posted on holyhexes.com. David McGowan revisits the Black Dahlia murder. The unparalleled tour guide to creepy California is David McGowan, author of Programmed to Kill and the sensational Inside Laurel Canyon series. McGowan attempts to link the Black Dahlia murder to the activities in the canyon of the 60s in Part 18 of his Inside the LC, the Laurel Canyon. Inside the LC, the strange but mostly true story of Laurel Canyon and the birth of the hippie generation. McGowan succeeds tremendously, and a reader has to love his quips about walk-in vaults beneath a home as a very handy feature. McGowan possesses the mind and instincts to see through the bowl thrown at the public, in other words, a writer equipped with a top-flight bullshit detector. This part 18 of Inside the LC revolves around John Phillips of the Mamas and the Papas and quotes from his biography, Papa John. Phillips relates events in his life but doesn't fool McGowan. Inside the LC, a series of essays reveals how many of the lead characters of the hippie movement came from military families in the towns surrounding the Pentagon. Phillips is no exception, as McGowan points out. Phillips played basketball at George Washington High School, from where he graduated in 1953. He then scored an appointment to Annapolis Naval Academy, but soon dropped out. One of his first paying jobs was working on a fishing charter boat. As John later recalled it, the crew consisted of him, a retired Navy officer, and four retired Army generals. Seems like a perfect fit for one of the future guiding lights of the hippie movement. McGowan implies the hippie movement was little more than an intel-backed psychological operation perpetrated on the public. Part 18 further reveals a world-weary McGowan who sees only a business-as-usual style of the rich and powerful. Dr. George Hodel, H-O-D-E-L, is regarded as one promising suspect in the murder and also the father of Tamar Hodel, who acts as a mother figure to the then 17-year-old Michelle Gilliam, John Phillips' future wife, who would become Michelle Phillips. Tamar was treated like a sex object, typical in these families, but became pregnant by her father and against his wishes got an abortion. Dr. George Hodel was later arrested and charged. McGowan sees clearly how privilege works while noting accusations that came out during Hodel's trial, allegations that the rich and powerful were dabbling in incest, hypnotism, mind control, pedophilic orgies, and Luciferian philosophies must surely have been shocking to Angelenos in the 1940s, as they would still be to most Americans today. But to these jaded eyes and ears, it sounds just like business as usual. Also sounding like business as usual is that Tamar was roundly vilified by both the press and the defense team led by Jerry Geisler, and Dr. George Hodel was acquitted. How is it that the 14-year-old daughter of a lowly probation officer fell into the orbit of the daughter of the wealthy and influential George Hodel? Hodel's former home is currently valued at $4.2 million. Has never been explained, but Tamar, described by Michelle as the epitome of glamour, quickly took the youngster under her wing, buying her clothes, enrolling her in modeling school, teaching her to drive, providing her with a fake ID and a steady stream of prescription drugs obtained, one would presume, from her father. Have you come to the conclusion McGowan leads the reader? The Black Dahlia was recruited by a daughter of a rich and connected doctor for a ritualistic slaying in an underground walk-in vault beneath the home, her death, dismemberment, and missing organs facilitated by drugs and participated in by members of a cult engaged in satanic worship. This is McGowan's premise in his book, also on mind-controlled serial killers. This article, that the basic thumbnail sketch we've just now given to you, doesn't do justice to McGowan's essays and works. As a native of Los Angeles, he pins down John Phillips as possessed of occult leanings and successfully shows how the Black Dahlia murder may be connected to occult practices in the shadows of the 60s and Laurel Canyon. In reference to all the hippie kids coming from Spookville outside of D.C., we can also throw in, I know off the top of my head, Jim Morrison. A quick note on two other valuable resource sites. That would be knowledgefiles.com, an amazing source of free ebooks on occultism, getting into Waco, Oklahoma City, Columbine, important occult dates, the Equinox, Aleister Crowley, and of course his daughter, Barbara Bush. The other great source is Hermetic Library at hermetic.com. If you have questions about the occult or secret societies and not sure where to look, hermetic.com gives you rundowns on Freemasonry and, again, Aleister Crowley, the Baphomet. And there's also a link to Tracy Twyman's Baphomet series. All that and so much more from Aleister to zines on hermetic.com. Our final post on holyhexes.com is the 8/11 pop occulture news purge, the response, and the decline. 30,000 evangelical Christians gathered for Rick Perry's The Response prayer event, and counter-response were protests across Texas. More on this story from goddiscussion.com and examiner.com and BeliefNet, where 30,000 people gathered for Rick Perry's prayer event in Houston, Texas.
This loving and perfect God is also a personal God. He desires not a show of religion, but a deep connection with our innermost being. His agenda is not a political agenda. His agenda is a salvation agenda. Brother CL, you and I have had this conversation. He is a wise, wise God, and he's wise enough to not be affiliated with any political party. Or for that matter, he's wise enough not to be affiliated with any man-made institutions. He's calling all Americans of all walks of life to seek him, to return to him, to experience his love and his grace and his acceptance. Experience a fulfilled life regardless of the circumstances. I want you to join with me as I share his word with you.
Yes, that is the governor of Texas, Rick Perry. That was last week at his event with 30,000 evangelicals at The Response. And now, 1 week later, we see that he has officially announced his run for the middle management frontman of the phony democratic system that's supposed to be a constitutional republic. He's announced his candidacy in South Carolina, and as we also look at the breaking news on this Saturday evening, August 13th, 2011, full moon fever, somehow Michelle Bachmann won the Ames straw poll in Iowa, beating Ron Paul. But let's hop back to our other pop culture headlines. Air Force's use of Christian messages extends to the ROTC as well. That's from the Belief blog, and that follows on the story that we reported for you last week about the Just War, and of course, quoting from the Old and New Testament and from Nazi officers for nuke officers. Teen Mania's Honor Academy, Religious Indoctrination and Mind Control. Fascinating, amazing, disturbing videos from the intelhub.com. Wind tunnel rips through U.S., bringing tornadoes and a Holy Spirit revival for the upcoming 11/11. Doomsday shelter owners hope for the best, prepare for the worst. That's from the Huffington Post. Evangelicals question the existence of Adam and Eve, and you can listen to that report from National Petroleum Radio. And Noah's Ark floats into Cologne, Germany. And that is an update from BeliefNet on a story we reported for you back in June. Dutch man builds full-size Noah's Ark, and now it has set sail and is quite seaworthy. Nigerian polygamist marries his 91st wife and vows to make it to 100 before the end of the year. That's from goddiscussion.com, canadafreepress.com, asking if Karl Marx, socialism's God, was he stupid, insane, or possessed? TheCitizen.co.tz asks, has the occult taken over our music? Well, let's watch the throne and see. Shane Lynch reveals his dark times. Boyzone singer, quote, dabbled a lot in the occult and the darker side of life. More on that from RTE.ie. Expected to die, Harry Potter bit part actress reports miraculous recovery after baptism. Sexual predator sues for access to the Satanic Bible while in prison. The top 25 people responsible for Scientology's decline. Religious freedom declining for nearly 2.2 billion people. And that is a report from Belief Blog. And our last note on holy hexes and on this 8/11 pop culture news purge, the response and the decline. Pastor tased, mother stabbed during Alabama church brawl.
Our big story has had a lot of people talking today. It's also the most clicked on story on local15tv.com. It sounds like a TV show script. A pastor tased at church after firing his minister of music.
Yeah, investigators say a fight broke out right after services, and in the middle of it all, a church deacon pulled a knife and stabbed the mother of the minister of music. It all went down at the New Welcome Baptist Church in St. Elmo. Tonight, Local 15 News talked exclusively with a woman who had to get 19 stitches after that brawl. Andrea Ramey joins us in the studio with her side of the story. Andrea?
Yeah, Greg, she says she saw the fight unfold right in front of her, and it wasn't her son who started it, as has been portrayed. She says her son was ganged up on.
Well, I said, oh my God, he done cut me.
Agolia Moore says her house of worship quickly turned into a house of horrors Sunday night when a bloody brawl broke out in a back room of her church. She says church leaders ganged up and fired her son Simone, who had been serving as the music minister.
They owed him. He asked them for his money. And that was the big thing right there.
Investigators say Deacon Harvey Hunt whipped out a knife and started slashing people.
He done just like this.
You weren't attacking him.
No, I didn't do anything to him.
He just swung.
When I told him what he did to my son, he just came at me, deliberately cut me.
19 stitches and a surgery later, Agolia says she wants her side of the story told. She says while Simone did tase Pastor Daryl Riley, she says it was the pastor and other church leaders who started the fight.
He had got cut before anything started.
Agolia says Simone and Riley had not been getting along for some time before the melee ensued.
Last Sunday, Simone didn't take the Lord's Supper from him. And he was hot about that. Well, you can't make nobody take no Lord's Supper, the communion, if they don't want to take it. Everything Simone do at that church, Reverend Riley didn't like it.
Agolia says she no longer feels welcome at the New Welcome Baptist Church. Sunday service was her last at that house of worship.
Well, I'd never go back there again. Never. Probably won't go to St. Elmo, that's my home.
Now, the warrants have been signed for Agolia's son, Simone, and for the deacon who stabbed Agolia, both for assault. Now, Hunt's charge will be a felony arrest, while Simone's is just a misdemeanor. Right.
And so far, no word from the pastor or the deacon, Andrea.
No, we've reached out, but have not heard anything so far.
Whole world's coming to an end, Mal. From holy hexes to the Rawsome raids, we move to foodworldorder.com. Old media refuses to cover the Rawsome raids, avoids printing raw milk. And a witness says government agents stole $9,000 in cash during the Rawsome raid. It's perhaps the biggest story of the year in terms of fundamental food rights, and yet with very few exceptions, old media, traditional newspapers and news outlets, have outright refused to even cover the story of the Rawsome raw milk raids in California. In fact, naturalnews.com has learned from an inside source at the New York Times that the newspaper has an editorial prohibition against using the term raw milk in print. More on that story from naturalnews.com. Meanwhile, Monsanto preys on the popularity of omega-3s with fake fish oil. Leave it to Monsanto to take a good thing and corrupt it for financial gain. According to a recent report in Forbes, the multinational biotechnology / agriculture manipulating monolith has developed a new genetically modified soybean that artificially produces stearidonic acid, a type of omega-3 fatty acid, and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is expected to approve the frankenbean sometime this year. Monsanto appears to be introducing the omega-3 enhanced GM soybean oil called Soymega, or stearidonic acid soybean oil, SDA oil, at a craftily strategic time when much of the world is still reeling from the Fukushima Daiichi mega disaster, which left ocean waters ridden with radioactive isotopes. And since omega-3s just happen to be the most readily found in fatty ocean fish, the perpetual fear over radioactive and other poisons that may be lurking in such fish could drive many to embrace Monsanto's fake fish oil instead. And a quick blast of the 8/11 binge and purge news purge on foodworldorder.com. Hunger thieves blaming Bambi and the tooth burger. Pilfered peppers in city gardens, tomatoes too. Community gardens find theft is a fact of life. That is from the New York Times, and I was going to say it's coming soon to a town near you, but it won't if you're not trying to even grow your own food in your town anyway. More farmers markets means more jobs. That's from grist.org. E. coli found in deer droppings in Oregon strawberry patch linked to the outbreak. 14 sick, 1 dead. More on that from Barf Blog. And also appropriately from Barf Blog, human tooth found in hamburger in France. And I guess that can go along with the condom in a tomato can in Spain and whatever the ridiculous food thing we reported for you last week. Finally, on foodworldorder.com from Fox News, Michigan dumps 30,000 college students from food stamps, saves $75 million.
22-year-old Megan Kerr always comes to the Fox 2 newsroom with a smile on her face. So you never know how this eager intern is feeling on the inside.
I feel like it's very frustrating.
The state of Michigan kicked about 30,000 college students to the curb when they were booted off their bridge cards, and Megan was one of them. She really relied on the bridge card. That's how she kept food on the table. And as you know, college and everything that comes with it is not cheap.
Because if you stay in an apartment, you already have rent costs and other utilities and personal needs and things for your household, and you don't have enough money to make it stretch to grocery shop.
And Megan says she's not somebody who's out there abusing the system, getting stuff she's not supposed to, like liquor and wine.
It's not everybody who's abusing the system, and they definitely took it out on the college kids first when I feel like we're the ones who need the most help.
She's a full-time student, a senior at MSU with a part-time job, and her mom is helping as best she can.
It did help take a lot of the financial burden off my mother as well as myself, because my mom isn't in a position to send me money. Like some other students, mothers or fathers can send the money often. My mom is a single parent, so she can't do that.
The state is saving about $75 million a year by taking this card away from college kids. But some students are feeling like what may seem to help now could really hurt in the long run.
College students have so much debt as it is in the United States. It's hard for them to be able to pay all their bills and all the textbooks.
That can potentially be a negative impact for students. Maybe, you know, they're gonna have a hard time enrolling in school. That's going to push the education back, and that's not a wise way to do that.
I feel like they should have found another corner to cut. College students are already quite broke as it is.
For Megan, that $200 a month really made a difference. Now she's worried she'll have to decide between food or a utility bill. She says there is nearly not enough money for both. Monica.
Well, Audrey, any exceptions to this, or is every college student in the state stripped of their bridge card benefits?
Well, we've learned that single moms and students who are working 20 hours a week, they may still be able to keep their benefits. So,
all right, we'll continue to watch how this plays out. Of course, a lot of reaction, as you can imagine. Our Facebook fan page been busy with comments from viewers. Here is some of what you were saying about this story tonight. Ron Kowalski writes, it's called get a job. Job equals money for food. Another viewer says college students need to eat too. Work-study jobs do not pay enough to feed students. And finally, Jane writes, there are a lot of us in college and working, like myself, who can't afford food. Bad idea.
Setting sun, make a wish that weighs a ton. There are no handles
She looks as if she's blowing a kiss at me. And suddenly the sky is a sizzle. Sitting on the floor with a tambourine, crushing up a bundle of love. Don't take it so personally. You're not the only one that time has got it.
That's the final track from their brand new record, Suck It and See. That is the band from Sheffield, Arctic Monkeys. That's Where You're Wrong. And I saw them on my birthday night, August 11th. That's why we listened to a track from Arctic Monkeys, and we heard The Vaccines earlier. And August 11th is the date of the News Purge. That's Where You're Wrong, the 8/11 News Purge on MediaMonarchy.com. We are going to be going over so very much more in the remaining segment of this massive B-side episode 228 from MediaMonarchy.com. We've got West Virginia Worry, Oregon Oddities, Police State Updates, Obama Sia, Media Memes, History Mystery, Drug War, Bio Wars. But first, 9/11 Updates, as we are now less than a month away from the 10th anniversary. An explosive new charge. Former terror czar Richard Clark accuses Tenet and other CIA officials of cover-up. 911blogger.com, informationclearinghouse.info, Kevin Fenton, and so many other folks analyzing this story. White House terror chief alleges CIA 9/11 malfeasance and cover-up in a new interview. We discussed Bush describing, you know, why he sat in the classroom so long recently, because all these new establishment shills are putting together their puff anniversary pieces. But because we've all been analyzing these events for now 10 years, we can see it when it comes out and know that it contradicts the official conspiracy theory. Analyzing the CIA response to Richard Clark's allegations. Who knew what when? Furthermore, on our 9/11 updates, post-traumatic stress disorder from 9/11 still haunts. That's from the New York Times. And the Quran-burning pastor Terry Jones to rally in New York City on 9/11. You may recall that will be the one-year anniversary of myself and Clyde Lewis's successful media stunt burning the 9/11 Commission report here in Portland last year. New York beefs up security ahead of 9/11 anniversary, and we take that appropriately enough from NationalTerrorAlert.com. From JFK to 9/11, conspiracy theories thrive. Associated Press posted to Yahoo, in Dealey Plaza with a white X painted on the spot where President Kennedy was assassinated, ask anyone about the grassy knoll and the second gunman. Conspiracy theories come with the territory here. And at Barb X restaurant on the other side of this sprawling city, six men sit on a covered porch and convene a meeting of the North Texans for 9/11 Truth Group and talk about the government's lies about 9/11. The group has 50 active members, 200 on the mailing list, and they number among the many thousands who, after years of investigations, don't believe the official version of how the World Trade Center collapsed, who was responsible, or what the government knew and when. Politics doesn't have anything to do with it. Two were once staunch Bush-voting conservatives, two are progressives, and two weren't even interested in current events until 9/11. The article goes on. I haven't read the entire thing. Surely there's good, truthful bits in there, but surely the rest of it is just official story. And as a way to illustrate that, it's posted on 911blogger.com. It is originally from Reuters reporting about the Associated Press releasing their style guide for 9/11 and the timeline of events to their writers, because Associated Press writers are all over the place. There's the style guide for them to follow and the proper terms to use and the timeline of events and the pronunciation of the hijackers' names. So even though I haven't read that previous article in its entirety, from JFK to 9/11, conspiracy theories thrive, well, we can take it from the Associated Press that they're following the style guide. Explosive evidence. 1,500 architects and engineers for 911truth.org, or AE911truth.org. We've discussed architects and engineers. We interviewed Richard Gage at ConspiracyCon 10 in 2010 last year. What is interesting about this and why I provided the link is, in addition to the numerous feeds that I subscribe to, and that's how I'm able to sort through and kind of catch so much news and bits and put it together for you with some kind of context and subtext in some kind of entertaining show-like format with bizarre music in the background. This comes from Organic Consumers Association. And I subscribe to them for stories about health, sustainability, and food-related issues. So when I saw them post, they're posting about 9/11 Truth. No one has commented, and it hasn't disappeared, but this I find to be a very, very positive thing that just within the news feed from Organic Consumers Association that they're sending out 9/11 Truth information. Our last bit of 9/11 updates brings us back to the sixth seal, if you will, SEAL Team 6 and the Osama hoax, with three links: Deadline.com, the Deutsche Press Agency, and Raw Story. Catherine Bigelow's Bin Laden film getting D.C. scrutiny. Obama blasted over Hollywood's Bin Laden film, and Obama giving sensitive info to Osama filmmakers.
A potentially big blow-up, a new one, appears to be brewing in Washington. And in the middle of this is Representative Peter King, the Republican chair of the House Homeland Security Committee. And what we're talking about here is this film about the killing of Osama bin Laden, both blessed and aided by the Obama administration, due to be released about a month before the election next year. Congressman King, none too thrilled about any of this. Congressman King, why not? What's the issue?
Well, Brooke, the issue is that ever since May 1st, by the way, I gave and I still will give President Obama tremendous credit for carrying out the operation. This is not a partisan shot at President Obama at all. But for the last 90 days, we have had sensitive information on top of sensitive information being released by this administration. So many press reports about CIA operations, the fact there were Navy SEALs involved at all, the fact that there was going to be a CIA operation going back to the compound to examine the helicopter. We see reports in the New Yorker last week giving a minute-by-minute account of what happened regarding Pakistani airspace. I've been contacted by so many people in the intelligence community over the last 90 days, outraged over so much sensitive material, and not just me, Secretary Gates, Admiral Mullen, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Have
Admiral
they called Olson, you up personally?
For special operations. No, they have not called me. I'm saying they have made public statements.
I understand.
They've made public statements saying how too much information has come out and it's time to shut up.
Well,
now, to find out on top of that, that the administration is cooperating with Hollywood on a movie after leaking so much sensitive information
well,
for the last 90 days, I can only...
Let me get to that, Congressman, because I know, you know, listen, I've read your letter talking about this potential investigation. You mm-hmm. cite this particular column in the Times, and the quote is that the movie makers are getting... Let's see. The movie makers are getting top-level access to the most classified mission in history from an administration that is trying to throw more people right. in jail for leaking classified information than the Bush administration. Well, so we finally did hear from the White House today. Jay Carney in the briefing just about an hour or so ago, you know, was asked about this top-level access in the briefing. Here was Jay Carney's response.
First of all, the claims are ridiculous. When people, including you in this room, are working on articles, books, documentaries, or movies that involve the president, asked to speak to administration officials, we do our best to accommodate them to make sure the facts are correct. That is hardly a novel approach to the media. We do not discuss classified information. And I would hope that as we face a continued threat from terrorism, the House Committee on Homeland Security would have more important topics to discuss than a movie.
Congressman Kane, your reaction?
Well, obviously, somebody wrote out a statement for Jay Carney, and he has no idea what he's talking about. Because this administration has revealed classified information, sensitive information, step by step for the last 90 days.
Let me just jump in. How do you know that? Can you just share how you know that definitively?
Well, no one else would be coming from, except the administration. The fact that it was Navy SEALs that were involved, it was SEAL Team 6, that came from the White House. The fact that you can look at press reports of a doctor in Pakistan who was in jail today because somebody in the administration said how we were using him. We talk about, for instance, the article in the New Yorker last week. The fact that the administration actually said that the CIA was going back in to try to retrieve the helicopter that crashed in the compound, they announced that before the operation was carried out. There's been all of this information. I'm on the Intelligence Committee. 2 days after the operation, we received all of the sensitive information. More than ever, we were told this should not be revealed ever.
Congressman
and within
King,
days, it was coming out step by step.
I did. You know, I picked up the phone. I talked to our folks in the Pentagon, and they said, absolutely, you know, Catherine Bigelow has been to the Pentagon since Bin Laden was killed. She you know, had been working on this film loosely based on Tora Bora. She's now changed the storyline because of this death of Bin Laden. Now, I know she met with this, they have a movie liaison in the Pentagon to sort of read some of these scripts. By the way, there's not even a script yet on this movie. And also she met with the Undersecretary of Intelligence, who I am told went, and I'm quoting, out of his way not to reveal any classified information about the raid. So, you know, some people coming forward and saying, with everything else going on in Washington, sir, this potential investigation, isn't it a little silly?
Absolutely. Now, how can you say that? We're talking about revealing classified information that could put American lives at risk. And this what the administration has done for 90 days. If they hadn't done it up till now, I'd say, okay. But they have such a horrible track record. It's embarrassing what they've done. But more than embarrassing, it's putting lives at risk. And that's why so many people in the intelligence community have been outraged by what they've been doing for the last 90 days. And on top of that, if we can't trust them to keep classified or sensitive information in the last 90 days, how can we trust them when they're dealing with a Hollywood scriptwriter, especially someone who was involved in a previous movie, Ms. Bigelow, where the Defense Department had to break off its contacts with her because she violated her agreement on the Hurt Locker?
When are you officially going to launch the investigation?
I'm not. I've asked the Inspectors General of the CIA and the Inspectors General of the Defense Department to report back on what steps are being taken to ensure that absolutely no sensitive or classified information is given to Hollywood.
This movie, also, when you look at the timing, it comes out October, the month before, a massive, massive election in our country. How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, that's almost a secondary issue, except it puts a cloud over the whole project. And I've been told by people in the intelligence community, in the CIA, that when they agreed to cooperate, they were never, ever told that this was going to 3 weeks before election. And that took them totally by surprise. And some look upon it as a breach of faith.
Well, we're going to follow up on this for sure. Congressman Peter King, we thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
A top Republican blasted U.S. President Barack Obama for allegedly granting a Hollywood filmmaker unprecedented access to the top-secret Navy SEAL team for a movie about the killing of Osama bin Laden. Catherine Bigelow, who won an Oscar last year for her Iraq War movie, The Hurt Locker, is planning on releasing her film about the U.S. Special Operation Forces just a month before the November 2012 elections. In a letter to top defense officials, U.S. Representative Peter King, who chairs the House Committee on Homeland Security, said the information she had reportedly been given about the top secret unit risk exposing military secrets that could jeopardize future operations. The administration's first duty in declassifying material is to provide full reporting to Congress and the American people in an effort to build public trust through the transparency of government, King wrote in a letter to CIA Inspector General David Buckley and Pentagon Inspector General Gordon Hedel. In contrast, this alleged collaboration belies a desire of transparency in favor of a cinematographic view of history. King demanded the two internal investigation chiefs launch probes into the alleged leaks that included allowing screenwriter Mark Boal into a top-secret ceremony to honor the Navy SEAL commando team that successfully targeted bin Laden. Obama blasted over Hollywood's bin Laden film. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency, and my friends, that is fascinating, and that gets, again, to the heart of things we want to spend more time on than in the very near future on Media Monarchy. And those are just our 9/11 updates on this 8/11 news purge. That's where you're wrong. Let's go to BioWars and EnviroHealth updates. Japan government prepares plan to flee Tokyo. We grabbed this from the always valuable resource Energy News, enenews.com, creating a backup capital city in case of major natural disaster, again, like 3/11. And that got lots of retweets and action on twitter.com/mediamonarchy. City resorts to secret dumping to deal with piles of radioactive dirt. And the Mr. Cesium gag TV show suspended. All that going on in Japan. One from Wall Street Journal, the other from AJW. Oklahoma City rain at 1.62 microsieverts per hour. Dangerous radiation background. Again from enenews.com. Federal security concerns since 9/11 have turned U.S. nuclear power plants into armed fortresses. And it is BioWars/EnviroHealth. So, mysterious orange goo washes up on Alaska shore, and doctors find a uterus in an Indian man. Oh, good God. Let's get drug war updates. Studies show Americans' use of antidepressants on the rise. Surprise, surprise. Thanks, USA Today. Big Pharma saves money by testing new products on poor foreigners. That's from allgov.com, and you only have to Google Factor 8 VIII to learn about what that can look like, either before or after. But let's get to the other drugs. Op-ed in the Washington Times asks the question, was the CIA behind Operation Fast and Furious? That would be gun running across the border that's rapidly disappearing. CIA U.S. military operating inside Mexico's drug war. More on that from Global Research. Mexican military helicopter lands in Laredo by mistake. There's more on that from the Houston Chronicle, and we'll return to that in the War Whores. And our last drug war note, agents accused of making suspects eat pot. Border Patrol agents indicted in case involving drug smugglers. Two Border Patrol agents in Arizona are accused of forcing suspected drug smugglers to eat marijuana and to strip down to their underwear before being told to flee into the desert. Just a few history mystery notes. Jackie Fingers, LBJ, and other Texas tycoons in the JFK assassination. This coming from, I believe, new audio tapes that have been released, I believe, by Caroline. Former First Lady Jackie Fingers Johnson and Texas tycoons in JFK assassination. On a different note from the San Jose Mercury News, Louisiana's Tunica tribe revives its lost language. And our last history mystery note, Ted Bundy's DNA added to the database perhaps could solve cold cases. More on that from the Los Angeles Times as the murder and mayhem seems to spread, as we see Mickey and Mallory and church stabbings and sibling gangs and twins performing crimes and now this story where we're moving to next to our media meme updates as I take a breath. And we noted that this has been kind of an off week. It was my birthday and concerts and blah, blah, blah. And we all need a break actually too, because it is summer and I want to do have fun. I almost made this story its own post, and I may do it when surely some follow-up comes out and perhaps longer pieces of media come out. But yesterday when we were doing the live mixtape, and at the end I told you my story about cherry pie, I also mentioned and referenced the article I saw on the sidebar of the tabloid news. The number one problem in Hollywood was, is, and always will be pedophilia, alleges former child star Corey Feldman.
Corey Feldman has no idea what it's like not to be famous. He was just 3 years old in this McDonald's commercial.
McDonald's gift certificates.
I literally was famous before I knew my own name.
His roles defined the 80s. Goonies.
This was my dream, my wish.
Stand By Me.
You call my dad a loony again, and I'll kill you.
License to Drive.
The only difference between you and that greaseball is that he has a license and you don't.
Films that propelled him into the spotlight for his entire youth. But being famous so young, he says, caused serious damage to him and his friends.
Do you feel like you missed out on a normal childhood?
What childhood? I don't know what that means.
A lost childhood and a loss of innocence. He blames the adults, not just those looking to profit from charming children, but also some with far more sinister motives.
I can tell you that the number one problem in Hollywood was and is and always will be pedophilia. That's the biggest problem for children in this industry.
The casting couch even applies to children.
Oh, yeah. Not in the same way. It's all done under the radar.
Nobody talks about pedophilia.
It's the big secret.
And it's widespread?
Oh, yeah. I was surrounded by them when I was 14 years old. Surrounded. Literally. Didn't even know it. It wasn't until I was old enough to realize what they were and what they wanted and what they were about and the types of people that were surrounding me till I went, oh my God, they were everywhere like vultures.
Vultures who Feldman says abused him and his best friend, the late child actor Corey Haim, his co-star in The Lost Boys.
Well, what happens if my mom is dating a head vampire?
Feldman says the trauma of that pedophilia contributed to Haim's death.
There's one person to blame in the death of Corey Haim, and that person happens to be a Hollywood mogul. And that person needs to be exposed, but unfortunately, I can't be the one to do it. But the person that knows who did it and knows who he is watching right now, I guarantee you. Yeah.
Intriguing.
Yeah. There was a circle of older men that surrounded themselves around this group of kids. And they all had either their own power or connections to great power in the entertainment industry.
Feldman won't name names. And he admits his friend had a struggle with addiction, which he says was a mechanism to cope with his demons.
It was a symptom.
It was a symptom, correct.
Are we in it?
In 2008, the two Coreys confronted each other on their reality show about the dark past they shared.
If you let me get around in my life, man, rape, so to speak. I was about 14 and a half, and I'm saying this right now. What'd you do, man, when you saw that going down when I was 14 to me? What'd you do? You knew about it. You want to talk about the truth? Okay, well, then let's talk about the truth. I was being molested at the same time by somebody else. What'd you do? You know, there's a lot of good people in this industry. But there's also a lot of really, really sick, corrupt people in this industry. And there are people in this industry who have gotten away with it for so long that they feel they're above the law. And that's got to change. That's got to stop.
We contacted Corey Haim's mother. In an email, she said, "I'm not willing to discuss or respond to anything Corey Feldman has to say. I wish he would talk about himself only and leave my son out of it."
Is there a dark side to child stardom?
Definitely. I think a lot of kids don't really want to do it. I think that the parents want to do it more than the kids.
Chris Snyder says for most child stars, it's the parents that can cause more damage. And he would know, having managed with his late boss Iris Burton some of the most iconic child stars, including Feldman, River Phoenix, and Drew Barrymore.
The biggest problem in the whole thing is when the parents start to live through the kids and quit their jobs and buy expensive houses, buy expensive cars, and the parents aren't understanding it's not going to go on forever, and it just wrecks everything.
Feldman's parents managed his career until the money came between them.
I got legally emancipated by going to the producer's pension health and welfare plan myself at 14 years old and saying, what were my earnings and what's left? Earnings, by the time I was 13 years old, $1 million, which is really not that much money, but in those days it was, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, that was a good chunk of change.
And how much was left?
$40,000. And guess what? When I went in for the emancipation trial, my father said, since I spent my time with you on your last film and took it away from my office where I should have been focused, instead, I'm going to ask you for that $40,000 back as repayment for the money that I lost in my business.
You had to pay your dad.
Correct. You can check the court filings. That was a fact.
Wow.
So I started at zero at 15 years old, coming out of the hole.
We asked the court for the records, but they're sealed. In a statement, Corey's father, Bob Feldman, told us any money that the court awarded is a fraction of his claim. And this was a reimbursement for strictly professional expenses. For instance, private school, a publicist, professional wardrobe, traveling expenses, and lots more. This helped to save his career while he was in trouble with drug problems. I thought I was doing the best for my son, and I am always here for him. Child stardom is not a dream Feldman has for his own son.
I'll see you in a minute.
He is, after all, one of the few stars who doesn't let his child get photographed on the red carpet.
Would you ever put your own kid into the industry?
No, absolutely not.
Never?
Never. I believe that everybody in this world should have the freedom of choice.
And child stars don't?
Child stars have nothing. They have nothing. They have no choice. I was never taught how to have a family. I was never taught how to raise a child because I wasn't raised properly. I was never taught how to care for somebody because I was never shown genuine love. I was shown business. This is what you do. Here's how you read a contract. I knew how to read a contract by 10 years old, but I didn't know what it meant for somebody to come in and tell me they love me and kiss me goodnight. That's a problem.
The number one problem in Hollywood was, is, and always will be pedophilia, alleges former child star Corey Feldman. I'm rather amazed at this exposure coming out on ABC News. And again, sinister forces rear their ugly heads. Conspiracy of silence, Franklin scandal, Hollywood. We will return to this story as it may relate to the Star Whackers and other stories. But let's get the rest of our media meme updates. 12 classic movie moments made possible by abuse and murder. That's another one from Cracked.com, getting into the deadly sociopathic natures of folks like Hitchcock and Kubrick. And I believe that one, as well as this one, came from a listener, and I appreciate this. And again, MediaMonarchy@gmail.com for something we reported last week was, oh yeah, is there a Rising meme? We were talking about the rise of the Planet of the Apes and the Dark Knight Rises, and they sent a handy-dandy link to a website that has an infographic of the abridged history of movie things rising. Like the Sun Also Rises, Deep Rising, Rise of the Lycans, G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Rise of the Guardians, The Dark Knight Rises, Rise of the Silver Surfer, Black Moon Rising, Hannibal Rising, Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines, And there you go. Tweet it out over on NavigatingNetflix.com. Consumers now spending more renting movies than buying them. That's from the Los Angeles Times. And again, isn't that a great way to get you to pay for something you don't even actually possess? It's all fake. MSN asking the question, is Netflix hiding weakness? Lucille Ball would have turned 100 years old. Big Boy of Outkast arrested for drug possession, leaving cruise ship in MIA. Gavin DeGraw hospitalized after mob attack in New York. What seems to be some sort of flash mob attack. More on that from HollywoodMemoir.com and an update sent to me again by a listener. Rapper The Game could face charges tied to flash call. Basically a flash mob of people all calling the same number, asking someplace about an internship or something. And now it looks like he's going to be in trouble. And again, all of these things coming to what we've coined here now for the last few years in the coming I-9-11 is the punch in the Facebook. And I referenced the cherry pie story I told on yesterday's mixtape 11. And that was basically, August 11th was my birthday on Thursday, and I got a cherry pie, and it made us think of that song by Warrant, Cherry Pie. So we watched the video for Cherry Pie and the video for Uncle Tom's Cabin and Down Boys and the synchronicity, bizarre as it is. A few hours later, Warrant frontman's body found in Los Angeles Comfort Inn.
Fans of 80s slam metal band Warrant are mourning lead singer Jamie Lane, who has passed away at age 47. Best known for writing the song Cherry Pie, Lane worried the hit single might eclipse everything else he accomplished as a musician. Lane eventually came to terms with the song, telling metal website Blabbermouth in 2007, quote, "I'm happy as a clam to have written a song that is still being played and still dug by so many people." As yet, no cause of death for Lane has been released.
As sad and strange as the synchro mysticism is, we do have more from the Daily Mail, from MTV, from that ITN news report you just heard a clip of. Warrant singer Janie Lane, dead at the age of 47, and the interesting tie-in to this is discovering what his real birth name is, John Kennedy Oswald. Our quick couple Obamasiah updates. Establishment shills like Jay-Z and Tom Hanks and others party for Obama's 50th birthday, which is just a couple of days before my birthday. We get that from Reuters, and unfortunately it also included folks like Chris Rock, who I thought knew better. The icebergs cometh retaking the USA Titanic before the 2012 elections. That's also from organicconsumers.org. So we noted a little bit ago their 9/11 truth posting, and here, in the wake of a supernova of exploded hope in President Obama, a power vacuum is now spinning in our political universe. A desperate need to fill the void, lest it someday be filled with the unthinkable, babbling Bachman or weeping Bonner, has led to a frenzy of organizing among mainstream Democrats and progressives. So there's the Van Jones, Move On, Rebuilding the Dream, or the New Progressive Alliance, or any of these things. You'll have to read more of this on your own. But there's got to be some kind of Democratic challenger to the Obamasiah. You have to attack his fake left. He's been nothing but a, you know, handed off the killer football that the multi-generational serial killers and their front men hand off every 4 years, and we keep falling for the same joke. So Rick Perry is the neocon warmonger choice for president, and he, as we told you, he did announce officially today, and we saw the chatter and we reported it for you several months ago, because when you hear folks like the Council on Foreign Relations or Financial Times discuss it, you can maybe pay attention to it and know that it's probably coming. The other thing we'll throw out, I don't know if anyone's referenced it, but Petraeus Perry. Watch for that. And our last Obamasiah update is Obama beginning a vacation, traveling to the Massachusetts island of Martha's Vineyard for some vacation time with his family. I believe he went there this past Thursday. Or no, coming up. So he's not on vacation yet. It's tough to keep up with the golf and the vacations. But let's not go to Martha's Vineyard. Come travel to the wild, wonderful Pacific Northwest as we get our long list of Oregon oddities. Underwater volcano erupted off Oregon coast. More on that from MSN. And it happened several months ago, but now they discovered it when they were going down to get some kind of equipment or something there. Oh, it's covered in lava. After a night of tension, confusion, and a toxic cloud, Precision Cast Parts in Oregon says it will make changes to prevent a repeat. More on that from the Oregonian and just one of the numerous things going on here in the place that wants and loves to think that it's the greenest thing going. There's just toxic stews everywhere. And of course, nobody carpools, and every person I see in a car is by themselves, but you know. Umatilla set to destroy overfilled mustard agent containers. That's from BioPrepWatch.com, as we've periodically through the years given you updates about the Umatilla Chemical Depot in eastern Oregon. And I believe the same link to Barf Blog that we discussed on Food World Order a little bit back, we also copied it over to the Oregon Oddities, blaming Bambi. Did deer poop kill one and sicken 15 with E. coli in the Oregon strawberries? Meanwhile, Willamette Week reporting on the death of Mark Hatfield, died at the age of 89, the lion of Oregon politics. I believe it was a laundry list of titles and elected offices he held here in Oregon. And again, not being originally from here, I have to kind of learn as time goes on about some of these folks myself. Mark Hatfield, former U.S. Senator, Governor, Secretary of State, and the class act of Oregon politics for more than 40 years, died after a long illness at the age of 89, after months of hospitalization at the NIH building in Bethesda, Maryland. That's saying something to be the class act of Oregon politics, as we've discussed for you here recently with Wu and Adams or Packwood or Goldschmidt. Portland cop tasered disabled man on the TriMet public transportation system, and a story that ran in the Willamette Week recently. It was the cover story. It was called The Gun, about how easy or difficult is it to buy guns here in Oregon, as we have a wave of gang violence and gun shootings happening in the city, as I'm sure we're only seeing in other cities around. It just seems pretty close to me because it is. The follow-up to that story, The Gun, is the writer, who is also the gun buyer, turns his 9mm over to our Multnomah County Sheriff's Office. And another one on D.B. Cooper, mystery deepening after DNA test. And again, we'll have to get more into that with our man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. The story is decades old. Guy pulls a heist in a plane, has the money, parachutes out, disappears. Bad news for a Portland band with the unlikely name of Portugal the Man. They had a great time at Lollapalooza in Chicago last week, which I forgot was streaming the entire week for free on YouTube. But Portugal the Man lost all their gear in Chicago heist post-Palooza. Two links to our own Oregonian reporting on the story, where also frontman John Gourley talks about what the band lost in their theft. But let's end our Oregon oddities with a oddly positive note from CBS News. At Portland bars, pinball reigns supreme.
According to the latest figures, video game sales plunged to a four-year low this past May, off 14% from the year before. So perhaps there's hope yet for the old-fashioned game that the people of one American city, at least, have never abandoned.
They're an endangered species.
this rare hodgepodge of fanatics flipping small silver spheres across a flashing board, trying to score as many points as they can.
You're playing defense and offense at the same time?
Noah Davis remembers playing his first game at age 5. He's been hooked ever since.
There's something that is physically satisfying about hitting a shot in pinball that you don't get from video games.
But at bars like Over and Out in Portland, Oregon, the crowds overflow. Here, pinball still reigns.
No!
Portland is home to nearly 500 pinball machines. That's more than Chicago or Los Angeles. Portland also has something else. Pinball gangs.
We're pretty tame. For the most part, we just like to drink beer and play pinball.
They hold weekly tournaments, vying for national rankings and bragging rights. But they may be the last of their breed.
The market is dying, so I can see how there is only one company.
That one company, Chicago Stern Pinball. It's the only major manufacturer of pinball machines left in the world. Gary Stern is following in the footsteps of his father, Sam Stern, who started out as a pinball machine salesman in the 1940s.
My father taught me that a pinball machine was like a movie. It's got to have good theme, good action.
The pinball machine's heyday was in the 1950s. They were must-haves in arcades and malt shops and must-plays for coming-of-age teenagers. Stern churns out about 60 games a day. The average price is $4,500, with most of their U.S. sales going to private homes. Stern is hoping their newest model, a themed Rolling Stones game, will help increase sales.
The operating environment where games are operated has become more difficult because of the economy and people staying at home.
That's not something he has to worry about in Portland, where there's a dedicated group always willing to drop a few quarters and take on the machine.
You're always at the risk of losing. The machine is going to win. You're going to lose your ball.
But they'll keep playing anyway.
Pinball gangs in Portland. Who knew?
I guess I'd like to think that could be a nice metaphor for Portland. Let's now whiplash into our police state updates as we return to the drills in Boston that we've reported for you over the last couple of weeks. This update from the IntelHub.com gets into, one, the involvement of Navy SEALs, which we should now be paying even more attention to, and two, eyewitness accounts of possible holography and other bizarre space technology. So we've discussed many, many times audio spotlights and holographic projections in the sky and all of these things that can be used for some type of false flag spiritual space event. But I digress. We return to the borderless borders and get a quick note on the Mexican military helicopters accidentally landing in Laredo and flying around and over Texas.
Across the border, the sounds of bazookas, grenades, and machine guns have been heard throughout our sister city all day as the Mexican military clashes with armed gunmen. The city of Nuevo Laredo website says that at least two soldiers are now dead, along with three gunmen, one believed to be a teen shot from a military helicopter. Unofficial reports put the death toll closer to a dozen. Since Mexican media doesn't report on the violence, additional details are scarce. However, we did find this video on YouTube showing one of several military choppers hovering above the city, at times engaging in gunfire from down below. As has become typical, drug thugs are using vehicles, including public buses, to block the path of military convoys in hot pursuit during the confrontations. People writing on several blogs say the violence has been more widespread than ever.
From drug thugs to San Fran buses, new security cameras to keep an eye on Muni buses in San Francisco. That's from NationalTerrorAlert.com. I'll stop doing that. Obama ready citizen spies for action. That's from AltMarket.com. And we know he said we need a civilian national security force that's just as strong, just as powerful, just as well-funded as the military. The brown shirts, they will be increasing their ferocious tizzy as we approach 2012. We're going to have to figure out how to deprogram and approach many of these brown shirts. New less lethal weapons spread to police. That's from allgov.com, but they are actually just furthering the report we reported for you last week from Alternet about six creepy new weapons being given to your militarized police. And speaking of our increasingly militarized police, both physically and mentally and emotionally, scores of police brutality cases prompt federal investigations, and although we are doing our police state updates, it returns us to Portland, Oregon.
In Illinois, 15 prisoners are seeking to have their convictions overturned, claiming that Chicago cops tortured them into confessing. Today, a brief was filed by the former governor of Illinois, Jim Thompson, supporting the prisoners' contention. These kinds of questions are coming up in cities far beyond Chicago. Armin Katayan tells us that the Justice Department is stepping up prosecutions of cops for alleged civil rights violations all over the country.
They treated him like he was a piece of dirt. This is absolute from the get-go.
Jim Chassie's 42-year-old son, James, was out for a walk in downtown Portland, Oregon in September 2006 when three police officers spotted what they later described as a peculiar, dirty young man. Eyewitnesses say Chassie, who suffered from schizophrenia, appeared frightened. And when he ran, they say he was chased, knocked down, and beaten by police.
Would he hurt anybody?
No.
Not at all.
This is 700 pounds of guys taking somebody who couldn't lift 30, 35 pounds and saying that he was struggling.
This is video of Chassie being carried through the jail on his way to the hospital. He never made it. He died from blunt force trauma to the chest. An autopsy found Chassie was tasered, his ribs broken in 27 places. Two officers involved received 2-week suspensions for failing to ensure Chassie received medical attention after being tasered. None of the officers involved was fired.
These guys are supposed to be the peacekeepers, but in fact, they're raising all kinds of hell.
The Chassie family sued and received a $1.6 million settlement from the city, which admitted no wrongdoing. But this father wasn't finished. He hired a lawyer to present evidence to the Justice Department that his son's death was part of a pattern of excessive force by the Portland Police Bureau.
A federal law enforcement source says the Chassie case is one of a significant number of incidents that has prompted the Justice Department to investigate police here in Portland for civil rights violations.
Roy Austin is the Deputy Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights at the U.S. Department of Justice.
The good officers definitely know who the bad officers are. Everybody knows who the bad officers are.
CBS News has learned that Portland is just one of 20 police departments nationwide that the Justice Department has investigated for civil rights violations in the last year, more than any time in history. Among the allegations, in Newark, a rape. In Seattle, the fatal shooting of a homeless man. In New Orleans, another deadly shooting.
What we have is a number of departments where the officers are not given the tools that they need to succeed. Meaning that they don't have the training, they don't have the supervision, they're not held accountable.
So, Portland's current political leader, Mayor Sam Adams, told us he welcomed the federal investigation, calling the Chassie case awful and tragic. He says the city has added new training for officers. In a statement, Portland's Police Association said, "We handle often explosive situations fraught with risk, with professionalism and compassion." Still, in the last 20 months, there have been two more controversial police shootings, both fatal, leaving this still grieving dad with little faith in a force created to serve and protect.
There's just nothing I can do. My son is dead.
CBS News has also learned there were 52 criminal civil rights cases brought against law enforcement officers by the Department of Justice last year. That's the highest number of cases in a single year since they started keeping track, Scott, back in 2000.
Well, Armin, why so many cases now? Is it a matter that there is more police brutality, or is it just getting more attention?
Well, the Obama administration has made this a top priority. And on the other hand, with cell phone cameras and cell phones and cameras, you're just getting a lot more documented cases.
A lot more evidence. Thank you, Armin. Okay.
Collecting DNA from arrestees is unconstitutional, California court says. Meanwhile, immigration officials to continue fingerprint sharing program. Deal to share fingerprints is dropped, but not the program. Furthermore, on our police state updates, TSA managers at Los Angeles Airport get sensitivity training after transgender complaint. Airline pilots allowed to dodge security screening. That is from Threat Level. That's because the pilots know that the naked body scanners are harmful. Corporate media hints at military plans to take on U.S. during domestic civil unrest. Five reasons why U.S. riots will be the worst in the world. That's from Don't Tread on Me and also theintelhub.com. And we see that, and we saw it referenced through many of the things that we discussed with the London riots, is that you know damn well that the same provisions and the same drills and the same laws and acts are written and waiting on the shelf for the catalyzing event, for the problem-reaction-solution event, for the Hegelian dialectic, for the moral panic, the punch in the Facebook. Our last note on police state updates is an interesting one I saw in the paper. In sentencing, just what did the judge say? 3 years or two? Jerry Harrington spent about a year trying to convince anyone who would listen that the court system had made a terrible mistake. Even though court records had him down for a three-year sentence, he was sure that the judge in Manhattan had only given him 2 years. He told court officers, prison officials, counselors, and a minister, among others, that there was an error. But each time he said he got the same answer. The computer showed that he had been sentenced to 3 years. The only way to prove otherwise, Mr. Harrington said, he was told, was to get a copy of the transcript of his sentencing hearing. Mr. Harrington did not get the transcript until around the time of his release in July 2008, after he had served 3 years. Lo and behold, the transcript, which a prison official obtained for Mr. Harrington, quoted Justice Brenda Soloff as delivering a two-year sentence. It appeared to be the vindication that Mr. Harrington had sought all along. He planned to use the transcript to sue the state for imprisoning him for too long, but from there, the story only gets more complicated. After recent inquiries by the New York Times, the court produced a second transcript in which every word was exactly the same except for the sentencing. It said 3 years rather than two. Court officials said there originally had been a transcription error of the hearing on March 14, 2007, and that 3 years was the correct sentence. And that was that, court officials said. Yet, Mr. Harrington, 60, remains unconvinced. There's no doubt. I know what I heard. It's just like a cover-up. I don't understand this. Police State International. Finally, my friends, at the end of the 8/11 news purge, that's where you're wrong. We get to West Virginia, where as Manchin begins statewide Rebuild America tour, he says we need to get our act together. More on that from WVMetroNews.com. Manchin wanted to be on the super committee, but as we speculate, is he not establishment enough? Now, picking Rockefeller, that would just be too obvious. Fracking contamination report kept hidden for 24 years. Troopers driving in construction zone leads to a lawsuit. U.S. Olympian born in West Virginia Mike Barrett passes away. He won a gold medal at the 1968 Games. And our final note, CNN special to feature Blair Mountain. The new battle for Blair Mountain. There's a documentary, I believe it's already been playing. I saw it listed playing in New York called The Last Mountain, and it is about Blair Mountain. Tomorrow night on CNN, Soledad O'Brien is going to be presenting her new documentary, Battle for Blair Mountain, Working in America. And this is about coal mining in West Virginia. This is about unions. This is about armed insurrection. And it's about the history of my home state of West Virginia, so we'll have to download a copy of that.
With money tight and jobs scarce and the price of just about everything, including fuel, going up, up, up these days, people are taking a good, close, hard look at this controversial form of coal mining. It's called mountaintop removal. Take a look at this recent CNN poll. 57% of Americans say they oppose the removal of a mountain summit to allow a mining company greater access to what's below, the coal there, and is part of her upcoming documentary. They're calling it Battle for Blair Mountain. CNN Soledad O'Brien gets this exclusive firsthand look at this highly effective and highly controversial form of coal mining.
Most mountaintop removal sites are hidden from roads. To get a clear view of the aftermath, you need to go up.
Here we go. This is a mountaintop removal. It's process.
Right. They're going to be taking all of that rock material. They're going to take it all.
So where there was a stream is now depth.
Right.
And rock.
Right.
Another concern for those opposed to mountaintop removal projects, the blasting.
It shook the houses real bad. It cracked our porches, ceilings in our houses. But you couldn't prove it was done by blasting. This was just a bad place to live.
Charles Bella lives in Blair. When blasting began near his home in 1997, he was working in the mines.
Every time I'd complain about the blasting, the superintendent said to me one day, said, do you realize that you're biting the hand that feeds you? And I said, yeah, but I also realize it's the hand that's killing me.
Do you worry that the streams are damaged, that the dust is in the air? It's not healthy. You can't tell dust by sniffing, and you know it.
Another Sharples neighbor is Diane Kish.
Let me tell you, this fed our families.
So you don't think it's unsafe?
No.
I would take a drink of that water.
You would take a drink of this water? You would not.
Yes, I would.
Come on, look at the color. I wouldn't let you.
Better than black.
When you look at this mountain, you know, the trees are stripped away. Is that progress to you?
It's a job in the making.
Soledad O'Brien, I look forward to watching this documentary. I have been up in a helicopter over those mountains as well. And, you know, this really is a battle. And the battle with two sides. You have the people who say, you know, this argument, it's all about jobs. And then there are the folks who are concerned about the environment, more so than, you know, feeding one's family with these coal jobs. Which side do the folks there in West Virginia fall on?
You know, I actually think it's more nuanced than those two sides. I think it's often broken down to jobs versus the environment. But what we really found was that it's more complicated than that. There are certainly people who want to see jobs in the region, but also don't necessarily want their drinking water or their water at all to have toxins or be poisoned in any way. And there are certainly people who feel like they understand that those things should be able to coexist, but how do you get there? So I actually think, ultimately, when you see this big battle, there are people who love their community, and they love it so much that they're willing to really fight hard for it. So I don't know that it's necessarily, you know, why should people have to have an either or? Why should it have to be jobs or a clean environment? Isn't there something in between that they can fight for and win?
Yeah, I thought that man said it best, that yes, you know, he's biting the hand that feeds him, but it's also killing him. And you know, though, for people who aren't in West Virginia, who don't live in that state, how does this story really resonate nationwide?
Well, I mean, I think today everybody's talking about jobs, obviously, because that is what we need in the United States right now. And also, for anybody who's not in a coal-producing part of the country, we all, you know, walk into a room, flick a light switch on, and expect that the lights are going to come on.
You don't even
think about it. You know, a lot of that has to do, exactly, and we want to continue not thinking about it. So the answer is not simply, well, eradicate coal production. It is how can you have people live together in an environment that's clean? How do you make it so people don't have to make a choice between a healthy environment and, you know, and having a job that pays well? Are there jobs that can come in? You look at it right now, there are not jobs that are coming into the area paying $65,000 a year, which is what the coal miners we interview talk to and tell us. $65,000 a year, that's a hard job to replace. So those are all the complicated and nuanced issues that are really happening. I think everybody who is watching the story, whether they're in West Virginia or outside of West Virginia, can relate to that. You know, Blair Mountain is really a metaphor for jobs in the United States, I think.
Yeah, Blair Mountain, I know there was a huge march over the summer, and essentially the issue is whether to blast Blair or not, right?
Well, I think the issue is if Blair Mountain could be mined, then what does that say about the potential for every single place in West Virginia to be mined?
I see.
At this moment, there's no one who's setting up a blasting site on Blair Mountain. But it definitely has become a symbolic point of where people are saying, let's stop it now. Let's stop mountaintop removal. Many of the coal miners say, well, mountaintop removal right now is where the jobs are, good jobs. And if, in fact, you do stop mountaintop removal mining, you are stopping our jobs, you're stopping our livelihoods, you're impacting our families.
Soledad O'Brien, we will be watching the images. There are stunning. Let's tell everyone when we can watch the documentary, Working in America, here, the battle for Blair Mountain, which side wins, Sunday night, 8 o'clock Eastern, right here on CNN. Soledad, thank you very much.
That's going to do it, my friends. This has been the B-side episode of episode 228, and it has been a massive one. I suppose it's nice sometimes to not really have to worry about the time constraints. But like I said, and now that I do actually have the moment to do it, unlike when we're doing the live shows, let's hop over quickly to twitter.com/mediamonarchy, where you can see there are many things mentioned over there that, for whatever reason, don't make it to the show and don't make it to the main sites, such as back and forths with False Flag News discussing Bank of America and Citi being insolvent, down 15%+ in a single day. They're the next Lehman and Bear. We also have something that we referenced on my recent appearance with Bob Tuscan on the Bob Tuscan Show on Oracle Broadcasting. Like I said, those videos are now up on youtube.com/mediamonarchy, and I referenced in those something I didn't quite have right or didn't quite explain. Fortunately, thankfully, a great commenter added the missing part that I needed to perform in the search and execute the correct search to find the information I want to find. And that was the flashback to a video of Mel Gibson doing a public service announcement, sort of, on the coming, essentially, of Codex Alimentarius and the federal/international crackdown on vitamins and supplements. So we tweeted that out, and we added that annotation to the clips on YouTube. Prank t-shirts given to neo-Nazi concert-goers in Germany reveal anti-right-wing messages when you put them through the wash. We also posted up a couple of Today in History videos from the Associated Press for August 10th and 11th, the day before and the day of my birthday, which include things like Son of Sam caught, LaBianca's murdered by Manson's cult, FDR stricken with polio, the Watts riots, the Reagan radio joke about outlawing the Soviet Union and bombing beginning in 5 minutes, the Mall of America opening, Alex Haley being born and Jackson Pollock dying, all that and so much more on 8/11. We also tweeted out something connecting to the prediction of earthquakes around the 11th, a 7.2. We reported that for you over on cyberspacewar.com with the planetary alignment, and again, that ties in with Elanin, extinction level event, 11.9. We don't know. Last couple tweets of things we didn't make it to the main show. North Korea fires artillery in the waters near Yeonpyeong Island. South fires back. Pentagon changed its story on the death of SEAL Team 6. The number of SEALs killed changes from 22 to 17. That's from August 10th. And finally, mayor puts Philadelphia youngsters on tight curfew after attacks. That is from August 9th. As we see, the memes, the panic, the flash mobs, cherry pie, and God knows what else, my friends. This has been the massive B-side episode 228 from MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. We will go out with another track from The Vaccines. It's called Under Your Thumb. And my friends, like always, don't hate the media, become the media. Take care.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Same. Out on my track.
And that concludes our program for tonight. Yep.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.